South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District Board of Directors meeting for Wednesday, October 21, 2015. May I have a roll call, please?
Terry DeLucy.
Here.
Mike Kirkel.
Present.
Chairman Hill.
Here. Item number two on the agenda is public comments for items not appearing on the agenda this evening. For those items that are on the agenda this evening, we'll have an opportunity, as each of those is taken up, to address those specific items. So this would be comment for items that are not appearing on the agenda this evening. Ms. Tacker.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and bear with me as I try to bring you along in my thought process. Each one of your communities has been asked to or has considered the Phillips 66 project. I know Grover Beach has written a letter raising concerns. Arroyo Grande has opted out of that opportunity. Oceano has yet to discuss it in a forum at their board meeting. But where I think the sanitation district should have this discussion is that your facility, trunk lines, lift stations, etc., all heading to that plant are in that blast zone. And this is your infrastructure. This is your property. And I don't know if you've thought about how an accident might impact your ability to treat 37,000 people's sewage should there be an accident and interrupting that flow or interrupting the operations at the plant. So I wanted to kind of bring that to your attention, ask you all to think about it, maybe agendize it in the future, but also look at how Phillips 66 uses 1,100 acre-feet a year of fresh drinking water to process its material, its oil, whatever stage of the fuel that they process. They're using 1,100 acre-feet of drinking water, and two of your agencies have entered into litigation into the Napomo Mesa Basin and those parties down there, including Phillips 66. I don't know when or if Oceano is going to join that litigation, but it seems to me that if that water, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, if that water was freed up by using the sanitation district's water, whatever level of treatment at the sanitation district to get it over to Phillips 66, to get them off the basin, just makes sense. And if you can tie the rail project up with some mitigation that uses that resource that's going into the ocean now, I think, you know, some people are for the project, some people are against the project. Whatever you do, you can't let the project go through the process without saying something about the water and somehow try to put a mitigation measure in there that talks about your water, talks about your infrastructure, and how it will protect your ratepayers ultimately and the communities that the three of you represent.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to address the board on items that are not on the agenda this evening? Okay, hearing none, I will move along to the regular items. Number three is the consent agenda. We have review and approval of minutes for our meeting of October 7th and review and approval of warrants. Are there any questions or anything we want to consider separately on the consent items?
I just have, since we don't have a section on finance, do you have, for things that aren't in the annual budget, you know, situations that it's occurred, like the Emergency Act, are you keeping a running list of what we've spent outside of the budget?
The budget's been adjusted to include the cost of that project. If you remember, we had $1 million extra and the board approved allotting a portion of that money for that particular repair. So,
okay. I use that particular repair as an example. So let me try this again. There's been several times where we've had to step outside the annual budget for expenses, whether it be specialty staff, whether it be cleanup, things that were not included in the annual budget. Do you have a section where we have a running tally of where we weren't able to add things to the budget? We didn't anticipate a lot of, I would say 90% of it wasn't anticipated, but we have to know how much we've spent total.
No, in our system, we generally take care of that at the quarterly budget adjustments, but if you'd like for us to create a column that shows what's outside of our regular budget.
Let's flesh it out a little bit better so you're not jumping through hoops and saying, well, that's not exactly what we were looking for, you know. And we'll flesh out a little bit more, but I'd like to see how much we stepped outside the box. And it's not an intentional thing. It's, you know, adjustments. And that's why we go back quarterly. But let's see a big picture.
Okay, we can
do
that.
I'll talk to you about it some more.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I move that we accept the warrants and the 2 sets of minutes.
Let's, John, do you have any other?
I don't have any questions now.
Is there public comment on the consent agenda items?
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and I think I've heard the answer to this question before, but it slips my mind. Why is the sanitation district paying property tax? This year it is $28,334. Most agencies are exempt from property tax, and I know we've talked about this before, and I'm sorry, I've forgotten the answer.
John, would you like to?
We pay property tax for property that we have in the flood zone. So it's actually a zone 1-1-A tax for the property that we possess in the flood zone, and for flood mitigation it goes, and they're supposed to help us mitigate flood situations. But that's why we pay the taxes, to zone 1-1-A, because we are in the flood zone.
Thank you. Okay, any other comment on the consent agenda items? Hearing none. Mary, your motion would be in order, I think.
So I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda items as presented. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Vice Chair Shells?
Yes.
Chairman Hill?
Yes. Brings us to the plant superintendent's report. Superintendent Clemens.
Good evening, Board of Directors. Chairman Hill. In area operations, if you look at our chart, our suspended solids are high again. We know exactly why in this case. We had a hydraulic line that's usually hydraulically. The sludge from the secondary clarifier typically is hydraulically fed to the front of the plant through that line. That line became clogged slowly. We didn't identify it right away because there was some flow through it, but it became completely clogged, and when that line clogs, then the sludge can escape the secondary clarifier and we get high suspended solids. That was during the first week of the month. We got a few high ones, and now we're back. We've had 3 in a row that are within our limits, and that'll by the end of the month, once again, we should be back in a normal scale. And so we show a little high now, but it's something that we've discovered and corrected already. We also have, staff has received a number of odor complaints over the past few weeks. I might note right now that we actually haven't received one within the last week, so there was a period of time that we were receiving a lot of odor complaints. We've reviewed and investigated each and every complaint. They were primarily from the area on the Strand near the beach. We visited this location both in the day and night time. I went out there at 10:30 on a couple of nights. Staff has reviewed our processes at the plant to see if there's any causes that are connected directly to the plant, if there's any way that anything that we can do to relieve these odor issues in that area. We've even checked wind direction. So we've also asked OCSD sewer maintenance crew to flush sewer lines in the area, which they did in working with us. We've not been able to really correlate any of the odors to the plant processes, but we will continue to respond to each and every complaint as we get them. And we will continue to monitor plant processes to make sure that we're not emanating, that we control odor as much as possible. In the area of maintenance, we unclogged that hydraulic sludge line I was speaking of that caused our high suspended solids. We unplugged the scum hopper and our number one primary clarifier. We ran our emergency generator and emergency backup pumps as part of our regular maintenance and wet weather preparation, make sure this equipment is operating properly. We ran our storm drain sump pumps, which is part of our wet weather check. Clean surface of our trickling filter and check the oil in the trickling filter. Rewired a sludge grinder. Replaced batteries in our centrifuge uninterrupted power source. It's a backup battery. And we performed work orders. What we have in progress right now is Gary Taylor and associates are still working on the sewer bridge project. We've retained a environmental inspection team to perform the biological resource assessment that's required by Fish and Wildlife, and that should be happening this week, so we move along. We're still working on drafting RFP for the grit removal system. We expect to have that done really soon. We're working on a plan for mechanical bar screen. A secondary process redundancy project. We've made contact with Slo County Permitting and the Coastal Commission regarding the project. We're in discussions to check on what's appealable to the Coastal Commission, what's county, jurisdiction. Those discussions are going on right now. Hopefully we'll have something to report at the next board meeting. We also spoke with the Water Board, State Water Board, the SRF people that give the loan. For the state revolving loan, and we just went down the process necessary to secure a loan from the state, and myself and Mike Nunley and Mike Arias, and I think it's Meg Ryan from Mike Nunley and Associates were there and speaking with the state representative. Also, we're installing a pH sensor and conductivity sensor at the headworks to monitor influent characteristics. I know this is a question that comes up. We've spoken to Mr. Knutson. He did perform his final interview. He expects to have a report ready either first or second meeting in November. So we're coming to a close on that project. That'll hopefully give us a lot of closure on one issue. With regard to training, staff attended a training session of reviewing the district's NPDES permit, making sure all the operators know what our permit is, where it is, what parts of the permit they should try to commit to memory, and basically, again, where to reference and get the information about our state requirements. Myself, Operator Arias, attended a Sanitation Area Managers Association meeting in the city of Santa Maria. At that meeting, the primary speaker was Howard Cole of the Regional Water Board, so we were able to get some good information. We didn't really have a whole lot of questions, but it was nice to be in a room in a conference, mini conference, where you had a lot of managers, and many of the questions we would have asked were asked by some of the other managers. But to have a water board rep there, it was really a gainful experience. Amy Simpson, our bookkeeper, attended the annual CSDA Board Secretary / Clerk Conference also. So that's the end of my report. I'll be more than happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
Thank you, Superintendent Clemens. Is there any questions from the board on the report?
No, any questions.
Any public comment on the report?
I got one question after you did.
Julie Tacker again, and I'm sorry, I know this is the wrong place to point this out, but the last item you just approved, Ms. Lucy was not the seated board member at the minutes that you just approved, so I don't know if that should be redone. But she should probably have abstained from that vote.
Legal counsel.
Let's finish this item off first, and then we'll take that. So, Director Lucy, you had a question for Superintendent Clemens?
Yeah. Honestly, I don't lay in bed and think about these things. So, we are moving in a direction, hopefully in our lives, right, where the plant is probably going to have to be relocated, or, you know, we'll hear about it from our, you know, wheelchairs or wherever. But so we've talked about relocating the plant, and now we're looking at a grit removal system, which is, you know, it's a lot of money, but I'm not saying it's not needed, right? And so if we're moving in a direction of moving the facility, how do we buy expensive equipment for the long term when the building quite possibly could be short term? Short meaning under 100 years.
In terms of moving the facility, that would obviously be a board action and movement. So I can't determine what we need to do based on that. What I need to do is make decisions based on the plant, where it is now, and what the best movements or the best acquisitions for the plant, where it is right now, assuming that it's going to be here a while. I haven't heard anything official about moving, so.
Well, the reason why I ask that is that if there's other options out there to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, one of the things about this grit removal system, it's kind of a package system, so if we move the plant, we could actually move that system with it.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you. So we'll receive and file the plant superintendent's report. Could I ask council to consider the prior comment, please?
So I do not see a legal problem with having an alternate director okay minutes, even though that alternate director was not sitting at the board meeting. When there's an alternate sitting on the dais, they have complete authority, just like the regular board member would have. So in that sense, and also the alternate is required to sort of keep up to speed on what's going on. I think that it is correct and all right if an alternate okays minutes and votes on minutes, even though that alternate was not present at the board meeting. And
no, I was present.
Am I answering the wrong question?
No. Oh. I wasn't seated, but I wasn't blind either.
So, okay. Well, there is no problem with. In general, that question can be put to bed.
Thank you for the
enlightenment.
Brings us to item 5, which is board action on individual items. 5A is a rate study report from Bartle Wells. We have a representative from Bartle Wells, but I'll start with Superintendent Clemens, if you'd like to introduce the item, please.
Yeah, good evening again, board. And this item, staff to recommend that the board of directors review the attached wastewater financial plan and a presentation by Alex Handler of Bartle Wells, and to consider directing staff to proceed with scheduling a public hearing, a 218 hearing to increase service charges, and issuing an appropriate public notice for the hearing. The sanitation district needs to fund a major upgrade to its wastewater treatment plant to meet anticipated changes in regulatory requirements. Specifically, we've met with the Regional Water Board, and they've indicated that our BODTSS will become more stringent at the end of this permitting period, and the equipment that we have in place at this time is not equipment that anyone would expect to meet those requirements. So we need to replace equipment. In addition to that, the equipment that we do have in our secondary process is at the end of its useful life period. The life expectancy is 30 years, or some people say less, and it's been in place 29 years. Neither pieces of those equipment have been taken out of service in the 30 years. We haven't taken them down. We haven't had a chance to inspect them because we can't, because we don't have any redundancy. So building an aeration basin and another secondary clarifier serves two purposes. It puts us in a position to be able to meet anticipated requirements, more stringent requirements, and it also gives us redundancy, and it'll give us an opportunity to take down the equipment and inspect it. And in the case of failure, we won't be in a position, we won't be in a really bad position, which we would be right now. In our last permit, in the plan changes section of our permit with the RNPDS permit, the district stated that an addition of a secondary clarifier and aeration tank is planned, and these changes will also provide redundancy in the secondary equivalent biological treatment process in the event of an emergency shutdown, mechanical failure, routine maintenance. So in our last NPDS permit, we actually told the water board that we would be replacing our adding an aeration basin and a secondary clarifier. And then during an inspection in 2012, our regional representative noted a serious concern with us not having redundancy at that time. I'm saying that to make a strong point that we're not just trying to make a change because we think this is something that the water board's watching and that they're wanting us to do, and that our coming requirements are going to require us to do. So it's almost not so much a choice as an absolute necessity. With regard to any rate increase, this district has not increased its service charges in at least 5 years. Right now, our service charges are the lowest in the region except for Santa Maria. And even with the proposed increases, we will still be probably the second or third lowest in the region at the end of the increase. So it's unfortunate. Well, it's just a normal thing to have to, you know, service charges and all that goes up. So, and I'll let Alex cover that because he's better at this than me. So, Alex, I'll let you go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So I've got a bunch of stuff, and I don't know how much background you have over this stuff. We've been working with the district for over a year. We were originally working with Paul Karp and then with Rick and with John. So it's been kind of over time waiting to get the final results from the redundancy project, which just came in a little over a month ago, what the costs, capital and operating costs are. So that's a big driver of this. So moving on, I'm going to try to walk through this pretty quickly. Please interrupt me if you have questions. I mean, I'm here to answer anything. If you have any questions whatsoever on this, don't hesitate. Could someone please, they didn't have the clicker. Oh, that's perfect. So, yeah, I'll cover the little background, talk about your current rates, the financial challenges you're facing, financial projections we developed, and kind of what the proposed rates and next steps are. On the next slide, who we are, we haven't been here before to this district, and your ratepayers probably don't know who we are. We're Bartle Wells Associates. Again, my name's Alex Handlers. I've been with the firm for over 15 years. We specialize in water, wastewater rates and finance. Our firm's been doing it for over 50 years. We've worked for over 500 agencies from all areas of California, and we're a charter member of the National Association of Independent Public Finance Advisors. So we're very versed in not only the rate side, but also the financing side for water, wastewater agencies. In terms of this district, quickly, I don't need to tell you about your own district, but what I see is a community-governed public agency. You serve the three agencies, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceano Community Services District, so you've got a pretty big service area. You guys provide the wastewater treatment. They provide the local collection. You then pick it up in your collection system. I think you've got about 9 miles of conveyance trunk lines, a 5 million gallon per day treatment plant, which is pretty good size, and you have the ocean outfall. It would be extremely expensive from working with other agencies. If you had to relocate your plant, that would be an extremely expensive undertaking for a plant your size. I wouldn't doubt it would easily be $100 million. I'm just guessing, seeing what other agencies are doing. You're financially self-supporting. You don't get property tax revenues like most agencies out there. You rely on sewer service charges to fund everything pretty much. So the two things we did were kind of the big picture financial plan. That's where we developed some long-term financial projections, include financing for your redundancy project, operations, everything that looks like it's coming down the pipeline to make sure your rates are, in the big picture, covering your future expenses. So it's all about recovering your cost of service. And kind of the second part of what we did is more of a rate review, look at your current rate structure, and under the evolving interpretations of Proposition 218, which is in the California Constitution, your rates have to have a reasonable nexus with the cost of service, and it is behooven upon the agency to have in their own administrative records demonstration that they're complying with this. So you had an old rate study from 2007. It was a while ago. We kind of updated it to make sure the rates were being derived from scratch to meet the legal requirements, and we aimed for steady gradual rate increases to the extent we could. Your current rates for residential customers, it's a flat charge. You charge all residential dwelling units a little under $15 per month. On top of that, the local member agencies add their own charge, which is anywhere from like $6 to, you know, $10 a month, somewhere in that range for collection. Your commercial accounts also pay flat charges based on variables like, you know, what type of customer it is, in some cases how many employees they have or seats in a restaurant. But basically everyone's rates are pretty darn low compared to virtually every other agency I work for. You rely on the member agencies right now to recover the rates. So in the process of the study, I'd spoken with people from every agency trying to get all the data. It's a little bit of a disconnect there because you kind of rely on them to do everything and collect the right amount of charges and make sure people are being classified appropriately. So there's not a lot of good double checks in the current system. This slide here shows how you compare with your rates with a number of other regional agencies around the coast. And as John mentioned, your three agencies have among the lowest rates out there. You're less than the kind of the regional median, less than half the regional median and average, pretty much. Santa Maria's rates are extremely low, but I think they're looking at rate increases. And I can tell you some of these other agencies are also looking at significant rate increases in upcoming years, more rate increases than you are. I'm thinking Morro Bay, Cambria. I think Paso Robles is looking at rate increases right now as well. Cayucos, Los Osos, I'm not sure about their rates already through the roof because they had to build a new treatment plant and collection system. Moving on to the next slide, we look at your fund reserves, and it looked at first blush like you guys had very healthy levels of fund reserves. Right now, it was the beginning of this fiscal year, a little over $5 million. I think it's around $5.5 million. But you dig a little deeper, and most of those reserves are in your expansion fund, which are restricted for expansion-type projects. The way your ordinance was written gives you a little more flexibility to use those funds on, I think, major repairs as well. So often we like to see the fund reserves on the operating side where you've got the flexibility. So one of our recommendations is whenever you have projects or expenditures that are eligible to be spent from that expansion fund, please use that money first. There was recently an agency in Southern California that actually had to refund some of its development impact fees because they didn't spend them over 10 years. So it's good to spend that money first. I know you're already looking at that to some degree, but one thing that a lot of agencies overlook is when they're doing just a simple replacement project, they say, hey, it's got to come from operations. And the example I show here is if you're replacing, let's say, one of your conveyance pipelines or a portion of it, you might not be increasing the expansion. You might not be increasing the size of that pipeline. However, the pipeline's only at half full now, so legitimately half of the funds can come from the expansion side, pending your attorney's approval of that. So that's maybe another avenue if you're doing repairs. There could be a portion of that coming from the expansion fund. Next slide. The financial challenges you're facing, obviously the biggest one is the redundancy project. I mean, this is a project, the latest cost estimates, including, you know, permitting, design, contingency thrown in there, is $19 million, a little over $19 million. That's in current dollars. The bidding climate's getting a little tougher for projects these days now that The economy's coming back, so there's a lot of water wastewater projects going out to bid in the next few years, and a lot of big ones, especially treatment plants. A lot of treatment plants were put in with the Clean Water Act 40, 50 years ago, and a lot of them are just at the end of their useful lives and needing major investment. So it could end up, when you bid this thing out, it ends up being more than that. We assume 3% cost inflation in the numbers we did. So you've got a $19 million project with cost inflation. On top of that, there are significant new operating costs. The engineers are estimating about $425,000 a year in current dollars. Fast forward that a few years with, 4% cost inflation, and it's looking about $500,000 a year of operating costs. That's pretty significant. That's the biggest driver, I would suggest, of the rates that we're showing in a second. The second is repair and replacement. You've got a lot of old infrastructure. The plant was originally built 50 years ago approximately. Yes, there have been investments and upgrades here and there, but you've got a lot of old infrastructure out there that's going to need ongoing investment. You haven't had to put a ton in prior years. When you put stuff in, it's good for a number of years, but as it approaches towards the end of its useful life, it costs more to rehab and replace. So we built in some funding for that in the cash flow projections, about $500,000 a year from the operating fund and $200,000 a year from the expansion fund. So it's about $5 million over 10 years from the operating fund and $2 million coming from the expansion fund over 10 years. It sounds like a lot, but it doesn't take many projects to get you there. And the third thing is operating cost inflation. For utilities such as water and wastewater, it's not the same as consumer price index where someone can switch from Coke to Pepsi. Historically, it's been a bit higher. It's a very labor and capital intensive industry, and you're always being driven by things like new permit requirements, et cetera. Typically for water and wastewater, it's more in the 4 to 5% range. So you need rate increases of at least, I'm going to make up 3, 4% just to tread water and stay even. And you haven't had any rate increases in 5 years. For the redundancy project, we do a lot of financing. We looked at alternatives under two financings. One is kind of the standard approach that a lot of agencies use, which is revenue bonds, sewer revenue bonds. And you can get sewer revenue bonds at great rates now, 4.5% 30-year tax-exempt bonds, or certificates of participation, which is the same thing that get used in California. But there's a great program out there called the Clean Water State Revolving Fund Program. It's subsidized by the state through the federal government through EPA. The interest rates are half of the state's general obligation bond rate. Historically, they only would give you 20-year loans, but as of a little over a year ago, they're now giving 30-year loans at the same rate. The rate's currently 1.6%. It periodically gets reset as the state does general obligation bond issuances, so it's likely going to be reset in the not-too-distant future. We expect it to stay low, but 1.6% is about the lowest I've ever seen it. Typically, it's in the 2.5% range, but this is equivalent. If you had to fund your project with revenue bonds, the payment stream on that compared to the payment stream of the SRF loans, it's really equivalent to getting a grant for, I'm forgetting, it's like 25 to 30% of the project if you otherwise had to use bonds. So it's tremendous. The first debt service payment on the state revolving fund loans, I just call it SRF up here, it's not due till 1 year after the project is complete, which is great because it gives you time to get your rates in place before you start having to pay that debt service. And the state revolving fund loan program has a planning loan process where you can even get the funds to fund your preliminary costs for design and permitting up front without having to draw down your fund reserves for those projects before you were to issue a bond or get the regular state revolving fund loan. So we often recommend agencies go for that as well. Again, it's at the extremely low rate that the state offers. On the next slide.
That periodically resets, but is it a fixed rate?
It is a fixed rate for the full 30 years. Yeah, it won't change on you. So when you lock it in, you're locked in if you were to do it today, 1.6%. Now, you're not going to be SRF, the way they work, they don't give you the rate and they don't even give you a formal financing commitment up front. You design your project. You have to meet their approvals. There's a little bit of an administrative effort to do this and an engineering effort. And they've tried to streamline it over the years. It used to be a little more onerous. But what they do is you have to fund all the design. They review your bid documents before you go out to bid to make sure you're meeting all their criteria. They approve your bid documents. You go out to bid. Then they review the winning bid and make sure it's up to snuff. And it normally is if your bid documents have met their approval. Then they give you your financing commitment. They actually put the money aside in a separate account for you, so it's pretty much as good as gold. The first requisition you typically submit to them is a request for reimbursement of all your soft costs. Then as the project goes on, you have to fund your own construction costs. However, each month you submit a reimbursement request to them. They process it, and typically it can take 2 to 3 months before you get the funding back. So there's a little bit of a float in there. If you have enough fund reserves, it's not a problem. If the expenditures are a little too high, some agencies we've worked with, we've gotten them revolving lines of credit at very low interest rates where they borrow the money kind of at a variable rate and pay it back 3-4 months later when they get the reimbursement. Anyway, so what we did, kind of the big picture, I talked about the financial projections. We developed 10-year financial projections. It's hard to know what's going to happen 10 years down the line, but at least you're kind of looking long-term with the goal of aiming your rates in the right direction, setting course to what it looks like you're going to need to be at, using reasonable but slightly conservative assumptions. Doesn't mean we've hit the target on everything. Your project could end up costing more, and it turns out we're a little low. But we normally try to err a little on the conservative side, so you're not caught flat-footed and have to go back and do rates in order to qualify for your state revolving fund loan. So I'll just run through some of the assumptions. We based our projections off your new 2015-16 budget. We assumed 4% operating cost inflation, whether it's staffing or insurance or chemicals, electricity. Your costs are likely going to rise. You've done a good job containing your costs over the past 5 years to get by with no rate increases, which is admirable, but I think that you've done about as much cost of the major cost cutting that you can. You don't have a giant staff that's easy to slice and dice people off of. We did include funding for a full-time general manager starting later this fiscal year. At the same time, we cut back some corresponding expenses from your administrative expenses that wouldn't need to be incurred if you did have a full-time general manager. We built in the new operating costs for the redundancy project. I mentioned they're talking $425,000 a year. Fast forward 5 years, you're talking about $500,000 there, pretty significant. We built in the redundancy project, assuming $19 million plus 3% cost inflation. I already mentioned assuming other ongoing investments in infrastructure. We built in kind of an average funding level for that. And we assumed repayment of the fine to the regional board, $1.1 million. We assumed that would happen later this fiscal year. If it happens next year, whenever, it's okay, but that is factored into our numbers. And we looked at two sets of cash flow projections for starters, one with the state revolving fund loan financing, one with bond financing. This chart here, we had the detailed cash flow projections in the rate study, but it's a big pile of numbers. This chart here kind of shows graphically, the bars show your annual expenditures. The blue bars at the bottom are the operating and maintenance costs. The dark yellow bars are your PAYGO capital program, and there's a light yellow bar there, which is debt service. And you can see what's really driving a lot of the rate increase going out 5 years. There's a bump up in operating costs for the redundancy project, and there's that light yellow bar there, which is the debt service coming online, in addition to ongoing, regular cost inflation. The blue line shows your projected revenues with the rate increases that we've built in here that I'll go into in a second. The next slide, what we're looking at, if you were to go get an SRF loan, is your rates going from a little less than $15 a month going up about a little over $11 over the next 5 years, so a little over $2 a year, to $26 a month for treatment. Because your rates are so low, it looks like a very big percentage increase, but that's only because your current rates are extremely low. A lot of agencies I work with would be ecstatic to face rate increases of, roughly $2 per month. And if you go back to that slide again, right before that, if you really look at this over the longer term, you haven't raised rates since 2010. It equates to your 2010 rate plus, if you go back two slides, one more. The one, keep going back. Oh, yeah. Yeah, backwards a little bit more. I think the slide, maybe it was 13. One more, but yeah, there, okay. It equates to your rate from 2010, escalated at 6.4% a year. So you haven't raised rates in a number of years, so you have a little bit of a steeper flight path now to get where you need to go. On the next slide, this shows it with bond financing. This looks very similar to the prior slide, only with bond financing. The debt service would come online a little sooner, and it would be more debt service because you're paying, you know, a bond rate, which is right now, I'm going to guess, somewhere around 4.5% versus 1.5% for state revolving fund loans. So it's a lot higher interest cost. Next slide shows kind of the long-term single-family rate with bonds, where the rates would have to go not to $26 a month, but to $29 per month for treatment. And that equals your 2010-11 rate going up at about 7.3% a year. So a little more significant rate increase due to the bonds. On the next slide, a couple of points I just wanted to show. I call this option 1A and 1B because this assumes no changes to your rate structure. Originally working with one of your prior managers, they say, hey, let's just show no changes to rate structure. But in light of, you know, the pending San Juan Capistrano decision, and we said, hey, I think you got to derive your rates from scratch and show all the underlying numbers and kind of realign them with cost of service. I have another set of options that realigns the rates that I'll talk about in a second. So 1A is with no changes to rate structure, but with SRF financing, state revolving fund loan. 1B is with the bond financing. We try to phase it in. You'll notice the rates are the same for the next 3 years under both options because you don't know yet if you're going to get bonds or SRF. So if you did find out you got an SRF loan, you could, you know, in future years stick with the SRF rates. Otherwise, you might have to get more conventional financing, which would cause the rates to be a little higher. So we assume the rates would have to be a little bit higher in the last 2 years with the bond financing, but we didn't want to bump up the rates in the early years while you're leading towards that. The other thing I wanted to point out is due to the postponement of the rate increases, originally these rates were going to go into place this past July 1. However, the data for the project wasn't there yet. So we, in just recent weeks, were kind of scrambling to update everything with the budgets and the project. So the first rate increase under our new projections is postponed to January 1st this year. So we're not looking backwards, not trying to collect anything in arrears, but it does put you in a position where you have a rate increase on January 1 that's delayed. Then the next one kicks in next July. We're assuming future rate increases are going to occur on July 1 each year. And if you ever were to go to putting your charges on the property tax rolls, like some agencies do, and I know you're evaluating that, that's when your rates would go up because you have to let the county know, you know, typically by July, what the rates are going to be for the upcoming year. And the other thing, as John already mentioned there, these are significant rate increases. We don't want to try to cover that up. I'm trying to put it in perspective here with what I do, but your rates are still going to be among the lowest out there compared to statewide and the regional agencies. Okay, next slide, rate structure realignment. The rates were last kind of reviewed in 2007. I couldn't tell how all the rates were derived from the old study, but under Proposition 218, your rates have to reasonably reflect the cost of service. There have been escalating legal requirements on what that means, most recently on the water side with San Juan Capistrano decision, which says agencies can have tiered rates as long as they can support everything they're doing with an underlying cost basis. The shadow of that falls over other utility rates as well. So I think your attorney would agree, you've got to make sure your rates comply with the latest understanding. So we updated the rates based on a cost of service approach. We didn't change your rate structure. I mean, sometimes we change folks' rate structure because all your member agencies have the same rate structure that you do right now. It'd be a real hassle. You can't just unilaterally change it because that's not how they bill and collect it from the member agencies. So it's almost like things right now would have to be lockstep with all the member agencies because it's one bill that gets sent out by the member agencies, and that's how they have your customers classified is according to that same rate structure. So we kept the same rate structure. We just made some adjustments. We try to use reasonable assumptions. In some cases, there's a reasonable range that you can use. For example, assigning what's the wastewater strength for a single-family home or a restaurant. You know, the literature has a little bit of a range there. So we try to keep things in line to the degree we could with where your current rates are. However, there are a few, so most folks, the rate structure changes are pretty minor changes, 20 cents here, 30 cents there. But there are some folks that have a little more significant changes, and I was going to just highlight those on the next slide. First, I always like to talk about residential. That's most of your customers. With this rate structure realignment, the residential rate would actually decrease by about 30 cents per month. So it worked in their favor by a tiny bit, pretty close to where it is now. The folks, I think, that have the biggest impacts, one is the trailer mobile home space. Prior to 2007, those folks paid the same rate as a typical any other residential customer. Something happened in 2007 where they reduced the rates, not by a little, but they cut them down to less than 30% of the residential charge for whatever reasons at the time. So currently, a mobile home place pays $14.19 per month. Even though you still have to have the facilities, there's a lot of fixed costs in the system. A lot of agencies charge the same as a typical single-family home. So respecting that there are lower flows that come from mobile home spaces and trailers, we came up with a reduced rate, legitimately, that's 60% of the single-family rate based on lower flow assumptions. So that would make their rate go revenue neutral with no increases from $4 to $8.74 per month. It's not that we're trying to give them a big increase. It's just that the rate's been so extremely low in the past. We're kind of trying to bring them up to a reasonable level. And that's still a very low rate.
Why 60%? Was that a...
Yeah, that's pretty common when we've looked at flows coming from multifamily dwelling units and mobile homes. It's not a perfect science because no one measures wastewater. But when you look at the winter water use from mobile homes and things like that, commonly it's 60 to 75% of what a single family home is. Sometimes it's a little closer. So we kept it at 60% in our assumptions, trying to keep it, we don't want to reinvent the wheel from scratch if we don't need to. So we try to keep things in line with where they currently are, but this is one that had one of the more significant impacts compared to most of your other customer classes. You've got about, 16 customer classes between your residential and commercial customers. The second one is the hotel-motel units. Currently, you charge more to a hotel unit with a kitchen than you do to a single-family home. For whatever reason, maybe there was some data at one point that supported that, but it's a tough kind of argument to make that a hotel unit has more flow than a single-family home. So we came up with some new flow estimates kind of based on some standards we've seen out there, and it worked out so that hotels, motels would see their rates go down about 20% from where they currently are. They seemed a little bit on the high side compared to what the norms out there are in the industry. You don't have many of these units. We just kind of wanted to point out the few customers that had the biggest swings to make you aware of them and, take any input. And the third was restaurants. You currently have very low rates for your restaurants and eating establishments. It's a fixed rate, so even if a restaurant's open 7 days a week, having high flow, they still pay a pretty low rate compared to many other agencies out there. Restaurants typically are high flow customers and typically have very high strength wastewater compared to a typical commercial office or a home. We tried to respect, again, where the current rates are and again, not trying to stick it to anyone, but try to keep things reasonably in line with where they currently are. But in cases where there needed to be changes, we wanted to point that out. So for the restaurants and eating establishments, the proposed rates are anywhere from 5% to, in some cases, 34% higher than where they currently are. But again, that's still based on low and conservative estimates of flow and strength coming from restaurants. Next slide. Shows what the projections are with the rate realignment. And I'm just showing it for the single-family homes because, this is most of your customer base. So instead of the rate with state revolving fund loan financing on the top there, 2A in yellow, going from 1486 to 26, it would go to 1486 to $25.48. And same with 2B with the bond financing. Instead of going to 29, it goes to $28.42. Next slide shows those long-term projections with the rate structure realignment. So your residential customers would see rates going up. If you really took it from the last rate increase, it equates to less than a 6% rate increase from 2010-11 to when these rates would be fully phased in to fund the redundancy project and its operations. And on the next slide shows with the bond financing and rate realignment, the rates would work out to be about a 7.5% rate increase compounded since your last rate increase. Just again to put it in perspective. Now, in addition to having these substantive requirements on your rates, Prop 218 also has procedural requirements. You haven't been through this in a while, and I don't know if your individual agencies have been through this in a while, but in order to raise rates, you have to follow this legal process. You have to mail notification to all the property owners and or customers of the proposed rate increases and the date, time, and place of a public hearing. Then you have to wait at least 45 days from the date you mail the notice. Between the date, you can hold a public hearing. And at the public hearing, rates are subject to what's called majority protest. If more than 50% of the parcels submit written protests, then you can't move ahead with the rate increases. Now, it's very rare that happens to get 50% of property owners to submit protests for anything, so it's very doubtful something like that would happen. But the thing I wanted to point out, the rates that are in your Prop 218 notice, you're not forced to implement those rates every year, even if you adopted them. You just can never exceed those rates. So the rates you adopt cannot exceed the rates that are in the Prop 218 notice. And once adopted, you always can implement lower rates if things worked out better than you thought. And the only reason I bring this up is because in order to get state revolving fund loan financing, you have to have the rates already adopted and in place before they will approve that you meet their financial criteria. They look at your rates, you know, to make sure you've got certain cover, that you have certain financial metrics achieved looking out at least 3 years after your project is complete. So you need to have the rates in place for that. And I'll say it's the same on the bond financing. No one's going to lend you $19, $20 million unless you've got the rates in place to support repayment for that $19 or $20 million. Where if they did, they'd give you an interest rate that would be through the roof that you wouldn't want to pay. So you can always implement something lower. On the next slide, next steps. So I don't know where everyone here is at in this process. I don't know if in the past we had like a draft report out there last year. But what we're hoping for this meeting was to get board input and direction. If the board was comfortable moving ahead, there are two things that need to happen. One is to get approval for what rates are going to be in that Prop 218 notice. There was a draft notice in the packet. If you wanted to make changes to that, obviously edits are always a welcome, revisions. And the second thing was you can't send the notice out without rates and without the date, time, and place of a public hearing. So the soonest you could do this would be December 16th. You have a regularly scheduled board meeting for that date. And that would be for trying to get rates in place for, at the earliest, January 1st. Again, this is subject to board input. I know we were looking at getting rates in place earlier this year, then all of a sudden everything came through, so it seems like now there's kind of a push to get things in place. Then in December or January, whenever it was, that's when you'd hold your public hearing to adopt the rates. And finally, as we've already mentioned a few times, it's well in your financial interest to go after the state revolving fund loan financing. It'll save you a lot of money over the term of the financing. So that kind of concludes what I wanted to cover. I would like to open it up to any questions, comments. And again, we're kind of looking for input and direction at this stage.
John, comment?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, you showed residential rates, but you didn't make a distinction between single family and multiple family. So are you treating apartment buildings the same as a single family residence?
That is the way your rate structure and all the member agencies' rate structures have been. It'd be very difficult to try to pull that out at this stage of the game because your rates are collected by the member agencies. So everyone's got the exact same rate structure. But you're exactly right. I'd say most agencies or many agencies in California have rate structures like that. A lot of the costs at your treatment facilities are fixed costs. You've got your infrastructure. You've got your staffing. regardless of whether the flows go up and down a little bit, maybe you've got a little bit of change for chemicals and electricity. So there are many, many agencies out there that have a standard residential rate. Typically what I see when the rate gets a lot higher, there's some agencies I work with, their rates are $80, $90, $100 a month. Then there's like a clamoring from the folks who are the multifamily. Wait a minute, we put less into the system than the single family. Our rates should be lower. But when you look at the water data, there are some multifamily units that put more flow into the system than some other single family units. So right now, there's not a differentiation. Sorry for giving you a long-winded answer. There is an agency I worked with. They had standard residential rates. They had big pushback from their apartment association. So we kind of evaluated it, and they came up later on. You can always adopt the lower rate. If you ever were to take your rates on the property tax rolls, I think you'd have a little more control over what the rate classes were. It'd be a lot easier to change things. You could always evaluate whether it made sense to have a separate, slightly lower rate for the multifamily customers. But right now, everything's assumed to be the same.
I find it fascinating that you would treat a 50 to 100 unit apartment, which could be one or two bathrooms, the same as a single family residence. I understand from a water perspective, on a single family lot where you've got a larger landscape and larger area, but from a sewer and wastewater treatment, sewer aspect, I find that a bit puzzling. But okay.
Yeah, it's something. If you wanted to change, you could evaluate whether you wanted to change that, and always at some point in the future, if your billing system was set up for that, implement a rate that's lower than it was in your Prop 218 notice. But it's very difficult to do that at this stage of the game without changing all the rate structures from all the member agencies as well, which is a little more of an undertaking. But it's a good point. But again, a lot of agencies just have a standard residential charge in California because most of the costs are fixed at the treatment plant.
Okay, and then I think you showed that the redundancy project was a large driver, or at least, a large driver or a large piece to this. So I want to ask this question of staff. I know that when we had a conversation regarding the redundancy project, there were some concerns brought up regarding there was one that the plant was not identified in an area of original jurisdiction for the Coastal Commission. Have we had any communications with Coastal Commission with respect to the process?
Yes, and again, I mentioned it in the Super's report that we are in a conversation. We contacted First County Permitting, and then we contacted the Coastal Commission, and we're trying to clarify jurisdiction in terms of appeals for our. So we're in conversations with them.
Okay, let me try to. So you're in conversations with them. Have they shared any information with you that you could share with us?
Nothing solid. Nothing that we'd be willing to share.
Are we wondering off topic, or?
Well, yeah. I don't know if I'm wondering off topic. I think it's a question that's out there, and I'm trying to just get to. I mean, obviously, we're talking about a big commitment here, and we've got a project, and I'm not saying that it would not be approved. I'm just kind of curious because that was some information that had been asked and hadn't really been fully vetted or responded to.
I hope to have an answer at the next one, but we really don't want to answer something until we've completed the conversation and we have a solid answer for the board. Anything right now would be the result of an incomplete interaction or conversation. So
okay.
We don't want to present that to the board.
And then you were talking about the timeline you're laying out now means if the board gives direction, you would come back on December 16th, and that's obviously after filing the notices and see if there's any protests from 50% or it really doesn't matter the number. Only
that's
matters
correct,
when going forward or not. I'm just thinking of the timing. I know there's never a good time, but I'm thinking December 16th puts us into the holiday season, and I'm not sure how people would respond to that.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, and people have brought that up before, but it's never a good, it's never a good time in the holiday season. I mean, if you keep pushing, it's been put off for over 5 years so far, and now we were originally going to do rates in July. It's been put off another 6 months. It keeps getting put off, and the more it gets put off, you're going to start running into next year's rate increase, so it just makes for a steeper flight path and means you're not, getting your finances in order as quick. Again, this is a balance of competing objectives, I think you've got. So Yeah. It's kind of more of a policy decision on your behalf
when
the stuff needs to go. And
maybe you can just reclarify for me again. You said there's an option 1A and 1B. You showed a couple of scenarios, one of which I think you were talking about it would really be an I know when people talk percentage, it's always confusing when they say percentages because when people give number and then you look at the real raw numbers. So you were saying, what, $2 a month in one of the scenarios? Is that what you were?
Yeah, actually, you look at the bond financing scenario, which is the worst of the two scenarios, and that's with the rate structure realignment. The rates go from 14.86 to, you know, I think it was like $28 and change. So it goes up, you know, less than 14 over 5 years. So it's a little less than $3. And with the state revolving fund loans, if you can get them, you're talking about it was going up a little less, maybe like 10.50 per month, somewhere in that range. So a little over $2 a month for each of the next, this year and each of the next 4 years. But, yeah I'm going to agree with you. The percentages are completely irrelevant in your case when you have got such a low rate. I've worked with some agencies that had a rate of, Palm Springs used to have a rate of $10, even though they weren't even covering their costs. They were using their general fund to fund a lot of their costs. So when they needed to do a rate increase, raising it, $4, that's 40%. Wait a minute. It's $4 over 10 years, and they hadn't raised it. Then I worked with another agency. Their rates were over $100. They're like $120. For them to raise $4, it's 3%. Same $4, but nobody blinks an eye. So, yeah, your rates are so low now that no matter what you do, it's percentage-wise, it doesn't look good. But they're going to stay low compared to virtually everyone else out there, no matter what you do, which is hopefully a little bit of a silver lining in this.
Okay. Those are all the questions I have for now.
Chair Calusi.
So you made the statement. Am I on? No? Yes. You made the statement a couple times, and I just want you to elaborate on it. You mentioned the pros and cons on why not to change a formula. You know, at this late stage or at this point in the game, or I can't remember your exact wording. And so, and it was about what Jeffrey Schultz had said, charging an apartment the same as a single family unit.
Yes.
And you had said something like to change it at this late stage or...
Well, I don't mean at this late stage. Originally we talked about, or is the district interested in changing the rate structure, looking at options? Not that anything's wrong with what you have, but do you want to evaluate different things? And early on it's like, well, no, it's also the member agency's rate structure. They collect, so it was decided that, hey, they didn't want to change completely throw out the rate structure and come up with something new. So we kept the current rate structure, but what we just did was kind of a new cost alignment in that. It is a little bit challenging to change a rate structure. I don't mean at this late stage. I mean, because you have these member agencies, I think it would be more of a process under your current billing system if you wanted to change the rate structure. You'd have to work with each of the member agencies. They might have to change their rate structures in conjunction with it because of the way they have things classified. But that's what I was thinking. If you ever did go to a different type of billing where you were controlling all the billing, then you've got a lot more flexibility to do what you want. And when you adopt rates on Prop 218, you can always implement something lower. There was another agency that had standard residential rates for all residential units, which I want to point out is very common because, again, you still have to have the facilities and staffing to serve that multifamily unit or single-family unit. So a lot of people see those as almost equivalent, but we have come up with rates for multifamily units that are lower. Again, that's another different reasonable approach. You can always do that because you wouldn't be violating Prop 218. You're not increasing anyone's rate. You're decreasing someone's rate a little bit, and it means you're going to get a little less revenues. But, you could weather the storm until your next rate increase and reevaluate where you need it to go.
Mike.
So it's doable, but I think would be a more involved process.
I kind of see it as maybe it's a separate project in itself, looking at all the rates and seeing what modifications you want to make and do that not in the middle of the two.
You could do it. There are cases where we've done both at the same time, but again, there's nothing wrong with what you're doing, and it's due to the challenges with the member agencies, it's hard to do that. But I would agree with you. In your case, that probably would be best to be its own separate project, since they're, yeah.
Okay, and then also on the restaurants, since they're dealing with food, and a lot of times they're dealing with a lot of fats and oils and greases, and they're very high maintenance for the little the cities and towns and districts in the area. And so is there some way you can, I don't know, look at that and see, you know, because when I look at where staffing is spending time and how much time they're spending on just these types of infrastructure problems, right, it becomes very costly because of the nature of their business. And so I'm not sure if it would even fall under this. I don't want to say do a separate line item or something, but there's high-risk businesses and low-risk businesses.
You know, you're correct. I think there's kind of a range of reasonable to what you can do, and if you can come up with a reasonable cost justification why it costs more for one customer than another, you're certainly eligible to do that. We did assume that the restaurant rates needed to go up. You know, I think one of the categories was 5%. Other ones were, you know, upper 20s or 30% based on, you know, estimated flow and wastewater strength, which is a lot higher than standard residential strength. But could it be higher? I think you can make a case it could be higher. We didn't do that in this right here, but that's something if you did want to look into. You could look at what the amount of staff time and things like that spent due to the high strength and the type of wastewater that's coming out of restaurants and its impacts on your system.
And the restaurants currently pay for the fats, oil, and grease program. The looking again, the one thing that just seems to be discongruent here is residences and apartments and mobile homes, which strike me as, you know, either similar or not. And here we're treating residences and apartments, and I presume that's per apartment, right? Not
correct.
Per apartment complex. So residents and apartments treated the same, yet mobile home different. Is there and that goes back again to the member agency charges, but it's also looks to me to be a disjoint. That's the one comment I have.
You know, again, I think there's a range of reasonable approaches out there. We work with some agencies. They have one charge for all residential customers, single family, multifamily, mobile home, condo, you name it. Another agency down the street has five residential categories, single family, multifamily with two or less bedrooms, mobile homes, condo. So different agencies slice it and dice it differently. You currently have essentially two categories. You've got residential, which includes single and multifamily. Then you've got this mobile home and trailer space that are kind of lumped together. So I think maybe with the trailer space, it brings it down a little bit. You're right, it's not perfect. Nothing ever is, but again, we're trying to work with what's currently out there. So we were recommending, that's probably the biggest increase was to the mobile homes, but still they're only at 60% of the single family rate at the end of the day, assuming lower flows. But a case could be made that, as you're bringing up, that multifamily units should pay a little less as well. So maybe that could be a category you could look at adding in the future.
And a lot of times the rate is based on water consumption, but water consumption for residences with, you know, the traditional house with a yard and so forth, is if they're using landscape watering, which we're urging our residents to cut back on, of course, due to the drought, but that's not using the sewer service for that portion of the water use. So the water use per resident for dishwashing and for hygiene and so forth is probably comparable, I would think, between a single-family residence, an apartment, and a mobile home.
Yeah, a lot. Sometimes it's not that different, and it's agency by agency. I mean, some agencies, they have a lot of people in each apartment. Other agencies have, you know, populations higher in a single-family home on average. So it's kind of like you're kind of taking these big groups. Occasionally, I have an agency that has rates with its, you know, based on number of bedrooms, where it's, you know, the rates here for three bedrooms, it's 90% of that if you have two bedrooms, you know, 80% with one bedroom, where it ticks up. Or some agencies might have a bifurcated rate where it's two bedrooms or less, whether it's single or multifamily, it's here, three or more, it's over here. It's not that common to have rates like that, and there are some agencies that have usage-based rates based on the water use. In some cases, it's 100% usage-based, like I think Paso Robles has, but a lot of agencies that have actually looked into this, they realize most of their costs, over 90%, is fixed costs. So they might have a rate that's like 75% fixed for all dwelling units, and that 25% is what's variable. And it's typically not based on all water flow for the exact purpose you brought up. In the summertime, you've got a lot of yards out there, so people's water use can mm-hmm. spike. Doesn't mean they're putting one more drop into the sewer compared to, you know, the other folks in the neighborhood. So often on the residential side, we've used a winter water use as an approximation, but that's not perfect either, especially if you have an area with a lot of vacation homes, because all of a sudden you have a lot of people, if they had variable usage-based sewer rates and it was based on winter water use, they'd pay almost nothing because they're not there in the wintertime, or maybe they're more in the summertime. So trying to use reasonable assumptions, understanding nothing's perfect at the end of the day, and that there's a lot of options that you have at the end of the day. But again, we weren't looking at changing all the rate categories in this go-around, but it's certainly something you could look at some point.
Okay, thank you. Those are my questions. I guess we'll have public comment on this item then at this time.
Good evening. A lot of this makes so much sense. And that brings me to my point, of which I have, I know, spoken many times already. But when I keep hearing things like keeping things reasonably in line or using reasonable methodology, ways to achieve or reach your equation, it brings me back to the billing and... Sorry, I'm like got so many thoughts going through my head here. I heard on a couple different occasions that property taxes, collecting through the property tax rolls, were mentioned as an easy option when making billing changes. I didn't hear anything as a negative about putting the collection for these three member agencies on the tax rolls. Maybe I wasn't listening hard enough for the negative, but I only heard things that sounded positive. And I keep going back to this keeping things reasonably in line, because my point with this whole billing thing over the last several months has been that one agency with 37% of the business charging more than the agency with almost triple that, double that, doesn't make sense. And so when I listen to this gentleman's presentation, and the whole point is trying to keep things in line, we have to kind of have a reasonable approach to this, I go back to this billing of $22,000 for Oceano and $12,000 for Arroyo Grande, or, excuse me?
That topic's not really on the agenda.
Okay. But during his presentation, which I think I'm talking about, the tax rolls were mentioned, the trying to keep things reasonable and equitable between the three member agencies. So I'm sorry if I'm drifting a little bit off, but to me that's it's something we've spent a great deal of time on over the last couple months, and I think we have better things to spend our time on, money on. So hearing this from someone else, I think, hopefully gives you food for thought when considering the tax rolls for collections. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment on the...
So is she in favor of a rate increase? Or
item 5A.
Good evening, John Mack. I live in Arroyo Grande. Excuse me for my construction attire tonight as a contractor. What I see is a rate hike here over 5 years of doubling the rate hike, and that's just not acceptable. We've been through a drought. Everyone knows effluent through a sewer pipe is equated to how much water you use. Thank you for the two board members that have brought that up. The only fair and equitable way to really figure out the billing system here is to either put a meter on the effluent going through the pipe back to the sewer. I'm going to say one more thing. Bedrooms don't create our issue. Inanimate objects don't create our issue. I would really hate for one of my rental properties to incur a sewer fee if no one's even living in the unit. People create the problem or the amount of fluid going through a pipe. It should be based on occupants, not square footage, not rooms, not this, not the other thing. It's people. And that's what we need to figure out here, is figure out how many occupants are in each unit. Not how many bedrooms, not whether it's an apartment, not whether it's a house. It's people.
Thank you very much. Ms. Tacker.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and the occupant item is interesting, and that is being done with some water rates in, I know, Cambria. Alex, they keep track of how many people are in the home, and also in Los Osos. I don't know, but maybe this is an opportunity to put in a drought rate in that you are treating higher strengths and you need a bridge right now because you are behind in raising your rates. Maybe you can. Maybe there is a sewer drought rate. I don't know. I see a bit of a conundrum. Last February, Kennedy Jenks was here, talked about the redundancy project. It laid dormant for months and months and months. And at that February meeting, I know myself and Mr. Edwards brought up the Coastal Commission issues. We're talking about February. This is 9-10 months ago. Your board, as I recall, asked Mr. Sweet at the time to get to the bottom of what the permitting issues would be. Nobody made the call. Nobody made the call. Mr. Jenks was going to revise his estimate from 2007 or sometime, I've forgotten the year, for the redundancy project, and he did somewhat, but he still didn't have that permitting data that's very important and what the Coastal Commission is going to require, or if they'll require anything at all. He was under the impression that the footprint's not changing, we could get by with a mitigated negative deck. But you asked your general manager at the time to pursue that information, and he didn't. And he also didn't get final figures from Mr. Jenks. Let that question lay out there. And finally, he hired, with your approval, Mr. Nunley to run the numbers again costs you $5,000 to come up with about a $500,000 difference in the actual price of the redundancy project. But he, too, didn't contact the Coastal Commission. And this is where Mr. Rickenbach is his consultant, his sidekick, who is the environmental specialist, and neither of them addressed the issue of the area of original jurisdiction. And just so you know, John, that is not an appealable thing.
You have to address your comments to the board.
Then this John.
And the board is the whole place.
This John, this Jim, you guys know. The area of original jurisdiction, it's not a question of appealable. That project has to be permitted by the Coastal Commission. It's their jurisdiction. So what will that permitting process add to the price of the project? You have to know that. So I think we're short that information, and it's no reflection on Mr. Clements. This goes back because your consultants didn't do what they should have done. And who knows why? In the staff report, it talks about the fixed film reactor being very old and perhaps needing replacement or certainly repairs, and the secondary clarifier. I don't see, and maybe I missed it, the cost for replacing those. And you'll have to show me if it's there. The other thing that's laying out there is that just coming up in December, you're supposed to have your feasibility study on the recycled water project. So if we're talking about raising rates, what's our ultimate goal here? To have a recycling facility? To make this property, this current project, be a companion use to a satellite recycling facility? That also needs to be folded into your rates. So I think we're still without a complete picture of where you want to go. Because I hear you. You want to have a recycling component. You want to recharge your aquifer. You want to do a lot of things with that wastewater. But we don't have all the costs out in front of us even yet. And so, and Mary touched on maybe moving the plant. That question will come up. It hasn't been asked at a board level. But that question will come up when we start getting that final price tag of putting all our goals together and knowing what is the end project. What do we want for the South County Sanitation District? So, and that's why maybe if there is such a thing as a drought rate, that you have a bridge to get you the rates that it takes to get through the higher cost to treat the water right now because the strengths are higher and you're having clogs and things that drive the cost of maintenance up or operations up, and you're not getting maybe enough money to do the things you want to do. But I really think it's premature to enter into the 218 rate process right now, and I think holiday time is a cruddy time to do it. But you certainly need more information on these other goals that your district wants to put into place.
Thank you. Any other comment? Okay, hearing none. Come back to the board for discussion. Discussion and a motion, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know if you can answer this. The idea of a sewer drought rate, actually, I think is a really good idea. I'm just wondering how would we logistically do something like that?
Well, currently, I don't think there's any agencies that have sewer drought rate. I think she's kind of bringing the point maybe there's a temporary bump up in rates. If you adopted rate increases, it's the same thing. You can always drop them back down, but it sounds like they're, if all these other things are out there, that they would all result in even higher rate increases. So I don't think your rates are going to be going lower, but if you wanted to temporarily bump up the rates and drop them down, a lot of your costs are fixed at this plant, so even though you might have some more maintenance during drought times, it's not the same as a water agency that's seen their revenues plummet by 40% because their water rate, they have a lot lower water sales during the drought. You have fixed sewer charges. So I have rarely seen an agency move ahead with a drought sewer rate. The only case I can think of where that would make sense is if you had a variable sewer rate and all of a sudden your water use plummeted, so your sewer revenues plummeted too, and you needed to do something to ensure financial stability. But it's an interesting idea. I think you need rate increases regardless of whether it's a temporary or you need long-term rate increases if you're going to support this project and other things.
So could you build a model that, let's say, either kept the rates where they were through the end of the year and then started going up? I mean, obviously, then the percentages and the numbers go up if you're overlooking at over a five-year time frame. Or is there a scenario where it's instead of $2, it's $1 for the next 6 months or the next year? Because, you know, not only are we talking about droughts, we're also talking about people still recovering from a recession. I'm just curious.
I mean, if you wanted to implement something lower, if we looked at the numbers, you got to go from here to here to cover the costs. If your rates were $100, you're going from here to here, no one would blink. It's just that you have super low rates. Yeah. Someone talked about the rate doubling. It sounds bad, but, you know, it was Ross Perot said, hey, you double a penny, it's 2 cents. Is that necessarily a bad thing? I don't want to play down rate increases because no one likes them. Customers don't, and certainly not you guys. And you kind of showed, you've tried to keep rates as low as you can for as long as you can. You haven't done an increase in 5 years. But could you do lower rate increases? Any lower? Yeah, you can always do lower rate increases. Lower rate increases in the near term mean the need for larger rate increases in the long term, because you still are going to have to get from here to here. And if you push that out more and more years, you'd be looking at a very steep hill to climb at the end, and you'd be missing out on a bunch of revenues in the intervening years that are being used to help fund things that you need to do and to keep the rate lower in the long run. So if you want to postpone it a little bit, you can. You could also, if you adopted rates pursuant to Prop 218, you can evaluate each year and, hey, the project comes in a little lower than you thought. Well, we're not going to implement the full rate increase. I've got some agencies that have done that. It's just a lot more challenging to go out there after 2 years and say, hey, wait a minute, we want more rate increases now. But the agencies have done that too, and I haven't seen any more pushback than a regular rate increase. And going off subject a little bit, there's talk about like things like recycling and things like that. Those are recycling, if it was done in this community, a lot of that would be for water supply. So often wastewater agencies that do recycled water, it's the water agencies and the water rates that are helping fund those projects, because it's a water supply project in lieu of potable water. So if you went down that path, I think you'd be getting funding from the water agencies who'd be benefiting from that. The only time I see wastewater agencies really fund all the recycled project is when it's an effluent diversion. Some agencies, they can't get rid of their effluent unless they recycle it and put it out there. So it's a wastewater project. But in your case, it seems like it'd be more water supply. Sorry to go off.
No, it's all good information.
With this rates and finances, a lot of things are possible. We talk about the rate structure and how you're going to raise rates. We try to gradually phase it in mm-hmm. in a way that seemed prudent and responsible and got you where you needed to go. If you did want to do something a little lower in the near term, more in the long term, or I've had other agencies that say, hey, let's just get it over with in one fell swoop and then kind of flatline it for a few years, but that'd be a little more of a challenge, I think, politically.
Yeah. And in your experience, someone had brought up this charge per occupant. Have you seen something like that implemented?
Never in wastewater rates. I have very few. Most agencies have a standard residential charge, or they might have a couple different residential categories. Some have partial fixed, partial variable rates if they've got the water data, and it's typically, as they say, based on prior year winter water use. But still, a lot of the costs are fixed, so a lot of the charge is often fixed. In terms of per occupant, the only place we've seen that is in recent years with the drought. Agencies have to do water rationing. They don't have enough water supply, so they tell everyone, we can only give you 50 gallons per person per day, which is what Cambria did. And by the way, you go over that, we're going to hit you with some real steep fines, not only a $50 fine, but rates are going to be 5 times and 10 times the base rate because we're running out of water. We don't have it. So there are agencies that have done these, what they call budget-based water rates based on occupancy. But to do it correctly, you're going to have to go send out, like Cambria did, affidavits to everyone so they can tell you how many people are in their home. Then you got to try to monitor that. people are going to come in for variances. I was on vacation the last month. I should pay a lower rate. Or, hey, wait a minute, I've got a college student back. They do on the water side. I should get more water this month than last month. But it's an onerous process, and they also mentioned metering the wastewater flow. It'd be great if it was cost-effective to do that, but unlike water, it's not easy to meter the wastewater flow. It'd be exorbitantly expensive, so just to meter it would drive the rates up way higher than anything that we're looking at here. Imagine maintaining those meters. It'd be a nightmare. So the technology is not quite there to do that at this stage, but it's a great idea.
Okay, and then if we had talked about delaying this, then at least the protest hearing until after the first of the year, because I do believe having a meeting, talking about this in December 16th really does start to get into a difficult time of year for a lot of folks, and I wouldn't want to add to that burden. So yep. What would be the consequences or implications of something like that?
Boy, I'm going to suggest that's not a huge impact in my mind. I don't want to underplay it. You've gone five plus years without a rate increase. Adding a couple of extra months, okay. It's really in the big picture not going to make it. The only thing that's challenging about it is now you're kind of rolling. You've already deferred this fiscal year's rate increase month after month. Now it's January, now February, March, whenever. Now it's running into next year's rate increase. So you're going to get pushed back from people. You get pushed back. If it's the holiday, you get pushed back. Hey, it's too close to the last rate increase. No matter what you do, someone's not going to be happy with the rate increase, and understandably so, but we're trying to demonstrate here, it's put it in perspective and demonstrate it's really based on paying the cost of service.
Great. Thank you.
Mary, comments?
I actually have to agree with Ms. Tucker on a few issues. One was... I, too, would like to kind of hold this for a little while because I think it needs some more tweaking, particularly on the households. But also, too, is that what is our goal here? Is it, you know, reclamation? Is it redundancy? They're all super valuable and important. And basic upkeep of the building. So... I think once, if we have a little time, we can get some of those housekeeping items out of the way. Also, too, is there's a current 218 going on right now. And I'm not sure, unless, you know, you enjoy going to these meetings or watching them on TV, that you know the difference between garbage and sewer, you know. So there's a garbage 218 happening right now. Now we're asked to keep a stinky can on our countertops because of the landfills. So I think that it would be better received in the community. I'm very uncomfortable with the affordable, minimal, dismal, affordable housing that we have in this county, which would be mobile homes, to burden them even more is, I almost think it's borderlines of crime. So I would really like to see an adjustment there. The same with people who are living in apartments that are smaller than 1,200 square feet. You know, I mean, for them to pay the same as somebody in a single family residence, I'm not quite sure that that's appropriate either. I'd also like to see us look at building in the rate increase and maybe every 18 months so we don't continually have to keep coming back for a 218. Coming back for a 218, it's a fair and equitable process. And if you don't get funny with the money, then people don't get, they don't feel the need to have to do a 218. Every time there's a rate increase. So I would support holding off for a little while until really our mission statement is clear. What are we going to tell the ratepayers? What are you going to do with this money? We're going to keep the plant running. We're going to do a redundancy program. We're going to do a water reclamation. we're going to, what was the primary reason? So I think we need to narrow it down and figure out exactly what the 218 is for.
Excuse me, Chairman, may I comment, please?
Okay. If, yeah, to answer a question, but I have some thoughts on it too that I'd like to share. First of all, I appreciate the efforts that Bartle Wells has put into this. I look at the mission of the district as providing obviously wastewater treatment to the level that's required for our environmental permits. And that means, as we look at it now, we've already been informed by the Regional Water Quality Control Board that our license is going to be tightened at the end of this license interval. And our plant is not capable of meeting the discharge requirements that we are looking at in the future. In order to meet those discharge requirements, we need to implement what we've called the redundancy project, which basically replaces and upgrades the end part of our treatment process so that it will meet the discharge requirements that we'll be faced with immediately. Failing to meet that means that we're going to have to look at the onerous prospect of raising rates to pay fines. And I find that unacceptable. I also find the potential environmental consequences of not meeting the discharge requirements, and especially of having a final part of our process that gets water in the bearing oil and hasn't been taken out of service since it was built in 1963, I find that unacceptable as well. And having been a resident of Oceano, where the spills pour over, and when I lived in Oceano, the effluent was measurable in the trees, not just on the ground. And I find that unacceptable. And there's one clear answer to those unacceptable things, and unfortunately, it's a rate increase. Nobody likes a rate increase. I don't like a rate increase. But that's what we're faced with. And so there's other peripheral discussions and desire for delay because of things like recycling. Our discharge permit is not going to require recycling, and I don't believe that we should ask the residents of this district to pay for recycling. One comment was made that recycling should be, it's basically a water, since we have discharge capacity, we're not looking at recycling for discharge needs. That's a water supply issue, and I think the water purveyors and the organizations that's bigger than this district, all of the various players, OCSD, Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, all of the northern cities need to get together and figure that out. But that's not a thing that this district needs to worry about unilaterally. What we need to worry about unilaterally is meeting our discharge permits and providing a safe environment for our residents. That's what this district needs to be worried about. And in order to do that, we need to have, unfortunately, a rate increase. So that's predicated on the reports that we've got from Kennedy Jenks. We know what's going to be required at our plant. We've had that reviewed by Carollo. We all know what it's going to take, and it's going to take some money. The good news is that I think there's a 30% contingency built into that. There's been questions come up about, oh, we have to talk to the Coastal Commission. And, yes, I feel your pain that we've delayed and delayed and delayed, and we couldn't get contacts going with the Coastal Commission. That is finally starting to happen. So what we're faced with now is we have a 30% contingency, some of which may have to go to additional permitting costs and so forth. But that's flat out where we're at. I wish I could give you a nice thing that says, hey, you know, we can do all of this for free, and we can have redundancy for free, and you're never going to see, you know, we can just let the plant deteriorate, and you're never going to see sewage in your trees again. But I can't tell you that without a rate increase. So that's where we're at. And it's not a matter of passing the buck. I think we need to have the discussion in December, because we've waited too long anyway. If we wait until January or February, that's when the holiday bills come in. I'd rather tell people right up front what they're looking at and give them a chance to adjust whatever they need to adjust as soon as we can possibly tell them that. Again, I wish I had better news for you, but I don't. So that's where I am at with it, is I'm ready to proceed with this now so that we can get our redundancy project going and avoid having sewage in the trees in Oceano, because I find that unacceptable. And that's the bottom line. So I'm ready to move forward, and I will move that we...
Well, Jim, before you make a motion, boy, good to see that fire up here. I love it. The only reason I'm bringing up December is not because people are thinking people are going to complain. I'm thinking that I want to make sure that people will review this when they're not distracted with the holiday. So I'm fine with everything you've said, but I think that it makes better sense if we do have a hearing in January. I think our expert has told us it would have minimal implications. So that was kind of where I'm going, but I agree with everything else you've said, with the exception of that. I just want to make sure that we're not giving people another reason to come out and protest. I want them to be able to look at this with a clear mind and make their decisions. And that's really why I have trouble with that date.
I'm willing to go until January to proceed with the hearing.
A question.
But I think we need to proceed.
When does the work have to start on the discharge permits?
What work are you speaking of? I'm not. When you say work, what do you mean? I'm sorry.
When do the permits for the discharge have to be into the state?
We, our last permit was submitted in February of last year. We were due to have a permit by October. The state has not issued us a permit yet. We're on what they call administrative extension.
So we're on an admin extension?
Yes.
And do we know how long those admin extensions are, and why would we be on admin extension? Mm-hmm. And my third question, just to compile it, is how long does that extension, once the permit is issued, how long is it for? 1 year? 2 years?
5 years.
5 years. Okay. So we need to have, when do we need to have the application back into the state?
We don't need to resubmit an application. We're just waiting for them to issue us a permit. The state is reviewing things. They were very behind a lot of people. A lot of other plants had gotten their permits late. We just may just be simply at the end of the line. We won't know. They won't tell us. They just have to. When they get around to it, they'll issue us a permit. But we don't have to do anything else.
Okay, so the 218 is not contingent upon discharge permits. They're already in the hopper, and we're just waiting to receive them.
And they
so we can take that off the table. Redundancy is an entirely different issue. I would support delaying it, but I also would support getting the facts and to be led to believe that our discharge permit is contingent upon, you know, by delaying a 218 initiative, that it's in jeopardy is not settling.
Has the state indicated that our new permit would include lower discharge?
The state indicated that in this permit, it would include lower discharge requirements. That's a direct statement. We actually asked at the time, could it be on the next permitting period? And they said, no, by the end of this permitting period, the current permit, And I'm not sure, since the permit was due to start in October, if they'll backdate the start of the permit to the expiration date of our last permit, or if it'll start at the point they issue this permit. But they've stated in no uncertain terms, but by the end of this permitting period, which would be 5 years at best, possibly 4 years by now, that we would need to meet these more stringent requirements, which would be a BOD of 30. Right now it's 40 on a monthly average, and a TSS of 30. And you see what our TSS is most of the time now. We probably wouldn't be able to meet that. But
also, too, is that our discharge amount is going down just simply for the fact that we're in a drought. You know, so there's not as much fluid being flushed.
That makes it more difficult because people are using less water, but the concentration, it's still the same amount of people using
most
less water.
Definitely. So. I agree with you. So. But the discharge amount is lower.
The total discharge amount, but they don't limit the volume. They limit the concentration in the water, and that's going up because of less water usage with the same amount of people. So that's what we're facing.
Thanks, John.
So I'm going to move that we direct staff to proceed with scheduling a public hearing on proposed increases of service charges and to issue the appropriate public notice for a hearing, but that hearing not be until January, maybe the second meeting in January. I think we still have some time to have a discussion over mission statement or if that's developing collateral materials to help inform the community.
Even the directors. Yes, I would second that. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Lucy.
My hesitancy is I don't know what the 218 is for. I've just been given so many reasons why we're doing it. That's my hesitancy, not that I'm opposed to it. It's what are we using it for? Oh, abstain. I hate abstaining. I'm abstaining for lack of information.
Vice Chair Schultz?
Yes.
Chairman Hill?
Yes. Passes 2-0 with one abstention.
And can we find out what the 218 funds will be used for?
Well, I believe you had most of that in your PowerPoint, correct?
But not a discharge permit.
If I could just quick.
Yes.
A lot of it is, some of it's for ongoing cost inflation. Some of it's for you've got to make some ongoing investments. But a big part of it was for that redundancy project, which my understanding from being in some of the meetings with the engineers and talking to them online, offline too, is this is the project you need to meet your permit requirements. They know what the cost estimates are. Honestly, it could be higher. I know there's contingency in there. There always is with these construction costs, but, you know, hopefully they'll come in lower, but you never know. But this is the financing, the rates that are in place to support the financing that supports the construction of the project that's needed to meet the permit requirements. And the only other thing I wanted to clarify, when you do a Prop 218, if you do a multi-year Prop 218, you don't have to keep going out and doing it over and over. Some agencies do Prop 218s every year, which I agree with one of your board members. It's, you know, not a fun process to be a ratepayer and get that every year. But often agencies nowadays, a lot of them will do multi-year. So they do one 218. It covers you for a chunk of time, and you could kind of follow it and reassess as time moves on. And you could do something lower in it, but you can't do anything higher than it. And the only last point I wanted to make was that's great if you're going to have a hearing in January and everything else, and we can work with staff to, you know, help with any materials to the extent we can. So there's a lot of good information, I think, that we have to help, you know, make your case and get the answers that you're looking for, whether it's from the engineers or from us. But there also have to be some specific rates put in there. So I know we had a couple of different options in our thing, so that would be the only other direction. You're not adopting the rates at this time, but what rates would need to go, and you'd have to know what rates to go on that notice. You've got a little time. But then again, the rates have the notice has to be mailed out at least 45 days prior to the public hearing. So this notice would have to go out by, I'm going to make up, you know, November, end of November, okay, or something like that.
And it, would it be appropriate to move at this time that we adopt the rates that were proposed with the idea of the state revolving fund financing?
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going to go, because I think I had asked the question. I think the audience asked the question. I believe the there were sufficient answers. And while I would love to delay this or do this in incremental increases, the fact is trying to keep it steady. I think I can tell you I've had experience on multiple of these in my city in which we kept rates low, and then when we finally absolutely had to do it, it was a significant impact on the community. So I'm okay with gradually fading this in, and if we do it after, obviously, January, we can talk about the actual data becomes effective. So
I would move that we provide further direction to staff to pursue the rates that were basically presented in the staff report with the target of the state revolving fund financing as opposed to bonded indebtedness.
I'm in concurrence with that.
We'll ask council to consider that. Meanwhile, I think we've got a, is that a motion and a second to provide direction to staff, or do we need to do that?
Well, I guess now we've got legal counsel looking up something that was out of order, a point of order.
Did the board have
a date? I think you could call a point of order, Mr. Chair, but okay. Well, let's just make it a motion and a second, and just to be clear
and
about
is it,
that.
What is the percentage increase for up to 5 years? I got 72%, but that can't be.
That is, looks to me like probably somewhere by the end of the 1920 billing period, single-family residences and apartments go up from 1456 currently to 2548. So off the top of my head, that looks like about 65% over between now and 2020.
Okay. But we're talking percentages, not dollars. The dollars are smaller when you talk dollars, not percentages.
Did the board have a date in mind for the 218 hearing, so that staff can know when to
meet? The second meeting in January.
January was
okay.
The
thank
motion.
You.
So there's a motion and a second. Okay.
Can we have a roll call on that motion, please?
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Vice Chair Scholes?
Yes.
Chairman Hill?
Yes.
Jenna?
I do not see anything prohibiting a board member from abstaining from a vote. The bylaws state that they can say yes or no. There's no specific prohibition that I'm finding at this time. I have heard abstentions on votes while I have been interim legal counsel here.
Yeah. I think we've had abstentions on minutes, votes on minutes and things of that nature.
Yeah. I just personally don't like to do it because people don't elect people to sit on the fence. Mm-hmm. So that's usually right. Why I don't do it.
It's okay. Legal counsel has opined. I think we accept your opinion. Jim, I think this item is finished, correct?
I think it is. And we've been asked for a 5-minute recess, so we'll take a 5-minute recess.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, we're coming back to order after the break. Thank you. We are on board action on individual items, which is agenda item number 5. 5B is agency billing formula. Superintendent Clements.
Good evening once again, board. On our agency billing options, the staff is recommending that the board consider directing staff to begin the process of joining the Slo County Tax Roll for long-term billing services and to seek billing temporary billing agreements with each member agency for the remainder of the fiscal year. As a matter of background, during May of 2015, district staff noted that there were no contracts for billing services with either the member agency. Another issue that was brought up at the time was the apparent inequity in the amount being charged by the different agencies. The agency with the largest number of connections was charging the sanitation district much less than the other two agencies. And by contrast, the member agency with the least connections was charging the sanitation district more billing services than the other two agencies. As a result, the sanitation district board of directors directed staff to work with the member agencies to develop a fair and equitable billing formula that all agencies could agree upon. The board also directed staff to investigate other billing options, and some of the options that were included in our investigation were private commercial billing services, internal billing options, and the possibility of joining the Slo County tax roll. We did investigate the requirement to join the Slo County tax roll. Our district council actually contacted the county representatives, and in attachment A, tax roll requirements, which was added on our page later, and we actually have handouts for it. But
yeah, John, because I don't, there's no exhibit A or attachment A from what I have in front of me electronically.
Okay.
So if you could give copies and if you can read through that, well, you can wait. I'm going to ask that question.
Okay, yeah, I'll certainly read through it since we didn't get it out till late. In the tax roll, without reading all the deadline to comply with all requirements to submit would be by August of 2016 for the 2016-17 fiscal year. The deadline that the district must comply with in order to add sanitation charges to the tax roll. So these are requirements. Adoption of an ordinance. The first step is for the district to adopt an ordinance electing to collect the sanitation charges on the county tax roll. The second thing would be to submit a request for new fund numbers to the county auditor's office by mid-June. That would be coming June. When this was written, the consideration had been for the current year. Now we're moving forward to looking forward to the next fiscal year. All new direct charges require the creation of a new fund in the property tax system. Therefore, the district must submit a request to the county to create a new fund before it is authorized to submit any direct charges. It must be accompanied by approved ordinance electing to have the district charges be collected on the county tax roll. The third requirement is that prepare a report identifying the parcel and charges. The district must prepare a report that contains a description of each parcel and property and amount of the charge for each parcel. This report must be filed with the district clerk. And then during the district staff's investigation, we found out we've got an estimate of about $10,000 for one of the agencies that's familiar with the local area to come up with that particular list. Notice of filing a report and time of place of public hearing. This is the 218 process. Before the district may have sanitation charges collected on the county tax roll for the first time, we must mail a notice to each owner of a parcel identified a report. The notice must state that the report has been filed and also provide information on the time and place. The next thing would be a public hearing. The district must hold a public hearing as noticed in the above mentioned report. District cannot adopt a report if it finds that a majority of the owners of the individual parcels of property described in the report have submitted protests. If the majority threshold is not reached, the district may vote to adopt the report. Submission of approved report to the county by mid-July. The district must submit the adopted report to the county auditor by mid-July together with a resolution adopted at the public hearing. Submission by that date allows the county and the district to ensure that everything is correct and in place by the August 10th statutory deadline. And then finalize all charges to be collected on the county tax roll by August 10th. By August 10th of each year, the district must finalize charges to be placed on the county tax roll. Any charges after this date may not be possible, and if they are, result in a $36 per change charge. And it goes on to say district staff was communicating with the county auditor's office regarding these various steps and requirements. During these communications, the county officer provided us with the names of consultants that specialize in placing local agency service charges on the county tax roll. Pursuant to this, we've been speaking in this case with NBS, who has provided us with an estimated budget. NBS has stated that it would cost approximately $10,000 for a one-time setup fee to assist with everything, getting everything into place. And then there would be approximately a $10,000 per year annual maintenance fee to place the charges on the county tax roll. If you remember, the original account said $3,000, but that was based on just one agency. I called and I talked to NBS again this past week, and to increase it to include our entire district, if we wanted them to update it every year for us, it would be an additional $10,000 a year, but that's actually something that district staff could take on too if we chose to do so once it's already set up. So those are requirements for county tax roll. That was attachment A. Staff has also considered the benefits and challenges of being on the tax roll. We learned that joining the tax roll will cost the district about $10,000. That's the same information. The county will charge property owners $2 per parcel per year for billing services. The cost of the sanitation district for gathering and administrating parcel information. The cost to the sanitation district is for the gathering and administration of the parcel information to be given to the county. That's the $10,000. This option also guarantees that the sanitation district is paid on schedule for all parcels. You get paid 2 to 3 times a year. It doesn't matter who's delinquent or who's not delinquent. They don't consider that. They just pay out whatever, according to the information that they've been given. So delinquencies are not an issue, which is a big deal with that. There will be no need for delinquent billing. This is also an option to also save staff time when compared to the current system of processing payments from 3 different agencies 6 times per year. The SAN district would also need to develop a separate arrangement for collecting fees for new connections. With regard to new connections, there's already an ordinance in place. Any new connection, there can be no new connection within the district to the sewer lines without first approval from the sanitation district. So we should have knowledge of every new connection each time. And so if we chose to take that information when it's given to us and charge ourselves. I mean, there's a bunch of different options, but I guess the point is that we need to develop a strategy for collecting fees for new connections. It could be as simple with the agencies who already do it as continuing what's already going on in the case of Grover and the Royal Grande.
I'm sorry, John, you're losing me.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So you're saying if you go with the county, there's an initial $10,000 for a setup fee.
Yes.
And then the $2 per parcel.
That's charged to the property owner.
Charged to the property owner. And so so you're saying this does not include delinquency? Is that an assumption that everyone pays their tax roll or their bill
timely?
I'm just curious.
No, that was a discussion we actually had, and the county does not, it's not an assumption at all. It's simply that they know they're going to collect, so they don't. I don't know what their philosophy is. I don't know why, but we did ask that question directly, and the answer is that they don't base what they pay us based on any delinquencies.
I think I can explain that a little bit. Is the county has a mechanism whereby, if property taxes are not paid within 5 years, they have a tax lien sale and sell the property on the courthouse steps.
Thank you.
So they have a method of collecting that's very effective.
That's my point.
Okay.
That's a pretty drastic situation, but continue.
So Yeah, the county doesn't. So, in other words, the district, if we were go to the county role, we would get paid 2 to 3 times a year. The changes that the district would have to make is we have to make sure we have enough cash on hand to get us from one payment to another. Other than that, property owners may, we recognize that their property owners may have to look at it and change whatever arrangements with renters, but we are hoping that if we can make, if this decision is made soon enough, then it gives kind of a leave time for anyone to make any adjustments they need to make. This would not, if we were going to go to the tax roll, it wouldn't go into effect until the next fiscal year. So someone could spend the rest of this fiscal year arranging and preparing for what comes next.
John, can you tell us what happens when, say, a property is sold?
When the property is sold, if we are working with NBS, for instance, they it's what they do for a living, so they keep track of those things.
So who's NBS?
It's a consultant agency. It's what they do.
What do they do?
They provide billing services. They help agencies get online, and then they provide services for agencies that are on the county tax roll. That's one of the services they provide. I'm sure they provide a lot of other ones.
And are they an additional expense on top of the $10,000?
They are the $10,000.
They're the $10,000.
Yes.
Okay. Getting the picture together here.
Data management would be a definition that they do.
Okay, so let's go back to it. So somebody sells their house. Does data management charge us $36 to make that change to the new owner, or do they collect? Or
no. The $36 that's mentioned here is if we were to make a change after the deadline for that fiscal year.
Okay.
If someone changes properties, and that the county is billing the parcel, so you know if it changes hands, that parcel still gets billed. How that's handled will probably be between whoever sells it and who's buying it.
John, I think Jenna.
It's still on the county tax roll.
So when the parcel.
Yes, please.
It's on the county tax roll. So when the parcel transfers, the tax roll connected to that parcel also transfers. So it's an automatic.
So it's handled in escrow.
Sure.
All right.
It's on the tax roll. It goes with the. Yeah. It goes with the property.
Okay, great. Thank you.
That's not something that we'll have to concern ourselves with. Any other questions on the tax roll?
I'm sorry. So were you done with your report? I'm sorry.
No, I was going to go to the other options real
yes.
quickly because
okay.
that's not the tax roll is not the only option. Staff has worked with the member agencies in developing a mutually agreed upon fair and equitable formula. That has not happened. The formula came up. One of the agencies chose not to. To elect that particular formula. The agencies can certainly continue to try to develop a formula that works for all three of them, but at this point, there's been no formula agreed upon. The formula that was proposed would have cost the district over $90,000 a year. When you compare that to $10,000 for the tax roll, seems better to go with tax roll in that case. We've also investigated the possibility of engaging outside billing agencies. Let me backtrack. One of the things that I did since I've been investigating this is I called and polled 20 other sanitation agencies that tried to stick money to the agencies that only provide sanitation services. Of the 20 agencies, 13 of them use county tax roll. 6 of them do internal billing, and only one did outside billing. Outside billing is a tricky character. You can't find one company that provides all the services. For instance, in one of the presentations we received, one portion charged $65,000 for the software and the billing, and then the district, in addition to $65,000, would have to pay for the billings, for the postage and the letters for the billing, which would come to another $30,000 or $40,000 a year. I just went through a PowerPoint with another agency called Pimentis. So what, the one agency that actually did outside billing, I asked them for the number, contacted the agency that's billing them, and I talked to them and sat through their presentation. They're supposed to be sending us a cost estimate. But getting back, it's 13 agencies use tax rolls, 6 agencies use internal billing, and only one of those agencies used outside billing. The norm is more the county tax roll. The internal billing agencies were, most of these agencies were larger. It's kind of hard to find an agency our size. But in the case of the internal billing, all except for one of those, their mechanism for collecting delinquent was still going to the county and putting a tax lien. So you, in those cases, when you did the internal billing, you still end up dealing with the tax roll, and you still end up with the inability to collect during the course of the year. And obviously, if you do it that way, it presents a problem for property owners in that a resident could not pay all year and then leave, and then you still have to bill that property for that year. So there's obviously no perfect solution. That's pretty much the point I was getting to. Both the other, the outside billing and the internal billing, you'd still end up going to the county tax to collect for delinquencies. Outside billing is obviously, we can't seem to get anything for less than somewhere in the neighborhood of $90,000. Internal billing would involve hiring new staff, buying billing software, and that would be quite expensive also, and you'd still end up with our original problem, which is the inability to collect. I believe that's one of the reasons that we were engaging the member agencies to begin with. And so all those things being considered, when we looked at it, when staff looked at it, you know, we kind of the priorities were financial. Obviously, the tax roll is the best financially. When you consider it a fair and equitable issue, as the agencies try to work amongst themselves, it's still very, very difficult to come up with something that's fair and equitable and fair to the Sand District. Because as staff, as we look at these things, our concern is what's fair to this district. We have to consider 37,000 people as opposed to a small segment of the people. So when we start talking fair and equitable, you do have to include the Sand District in that too. And when you start talking 100,000, then that's not necessarily fair to the district with regard to its cost. And so with regard to being fair and equitable, the county tax roll still seems to be the best option because it doesn't involve any individual agency charging more or less than the other. Everybody's on a fair standing. I'm sorry.
I'm just waiting for you to finish your staff report so okay. We can ask some questions.
I'm almost done.
Well, please. Okay.
Okay. Another point that we looked at was going forward. Obviously, they had this discussion 2 or 3 years ago, and it stretched out to 6 or 7 months with no real conclusion. And here we are 2 years later with the same issues, 6 or 7 months, and still having trouble. Again, going to the tax roll would eliminate that possibility going forward in the future. We wouldn't have this discussion. We don't have to worry about fair and equitable. We don't have to worry about cost. We don't have to worry about change. Another issue that came up tonight, if we decide to change our how we charge our rates or how we classify it, it's a lot easier to do if we're on the tax roll because it's one change as opposed to Grover Beach having a different accounting system or different software. And so when we make all these changes right now, we'd make one change, but it would require 3 different agencies to make correlating changes in how they charge. And each of the agencies charge according to their water, according to how they have their water rates set up. So we'd be asking them to make special adjustments on our behalf outside of what they their normal structure. That pretty much sums it all up. It just seems the staff's recommending that we go to county tax road. It seems the simplest, the cheapest, the fairest, and the best option of all. And certainly the board can choose any option that they like.
Thank you, John. Questions for staff? Start with...
Yeah, very interesting staff report. As a person who used to be staff, you typically try to write reports that are a little more objective and still give a recommendation. So I'm trying to work through this. You had mentioned the word protest at one point, and I don't know if that was was an error or what respect. Could someone protest us going through this process of going to the county tax rolls? I'm just trying to understand.
That part is similar to, it is the 218 process, so.
Okay, because you didn't say 218. I'm just trying to get the information out there.
Okay.
Okay.
So it would be a 218 hearing.
Okay.
We'd send out a notice, and the parcel owners would have an opportunity to come in and protest and do written protests, and if it's over 50%, then we'd have to find other options.
Okay. And then you're saying, so you have an initial fee, you have a consultant who comes in and helps you get the report to the county, it gets going, and then you have new customers. So you're saying we would have to find a new way to capture those and either bill or hold them?
We may have to find a new way. I actually spoken to one of the financial, with regard to Grover and Arroyo Grande, we could kind of continue what goes on now. They would just have to figure out what they would charge us, because they already notify us of every connection, and they charge us and pass it through, or they pass it through and charge us a certain amount. So in that case, you could continue. But if the city were inclined to not want to do that, then we'd have to find another option. But there is also the option of continuing in the case of Grover and Arroyo Grande. The way they notify us, it would just, again, outside of it being the arrangement is now, they would have to figure out what they would charge us now as compared to before. Because before, you had all our information and you were billing us, and to charge us for a new connection didn't take much research because you had all our information. But if we're billing through the county tax roll, obviously it takes a little more work for one of the cities to look up that information.
So, okay, but so you said the two cities, when there's three member agencies, so would that not be the same for Oceano?
Oceano could. They just don't currently, we don't currently have that arrangement with them.
Okay.
That's why they didn't include them.
Okay, very good. And then you talked about collection from the member agencies. You said they ultimately, or you said they also go to the county through the lien process. Is that a first resort or is that a last resort? I mean, because do they have the options to pull a meter or something?
I think the practice is to include it in the water bill and the trash bill as a whole, so that if you don't pay it, it's one deal, and so you get cut off. If you didn't get any portion, you get cut off the entire deal.
Yeah.
I'm not sure the exact mechanism,
okay.
But I know that it's
it goes
a last
before the board.
Yeah. No, I'm just asking questions because you we're making a staff report, and I just want to make sure that that I'm clear, and I think other folks who may not be in this audience who are watching this on TV understand what staff is presenting to us. I'm not saying, and I will just say now, in the past I had said I was not a big fan of the county tax rolls, but after reading this and getting information, I'm considering this with a lot more open mind. So I'm asking questions, and I really appreciate the respect of letting me ask these questions, even though they may be redundant or someone may have thought they heard the answer. So that's why I'm going through this process.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I'm going to say now, if I seem objective, it's...
John. No, that's okay. I don't want you to get defensive. I'm just saying you made a statement that just said that, this is what the county does and the member agencies would do this also, but when there are intermediate steps in between. So I just want to make sure that we're all clear. That's all.
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's the only reason I'm asking that. So other than that, I think it's been really good information. It sounds like council has helped you get through some of the role requirements, and I think this is really good information. This is information that had not been fleshed out before, so I think it's really good. Anyway.
Questions, Director Lucy? Okay, I don't have any either. Thank you. Vice Chair Schultz, for clarifying that for the public. I think it's important for the public to understand what I totally agree with you that it's very important that we clarify in everybody's mind what we're talking about. Is there public comment on this item?
I would just like to say, first of all, that I appreciate staff's in-depth explanation for the tax rolls, because I think it was something that wasn't really seriously considered before. And I found it very interesting that the polling of 20 other sanitation districts resulted in learning that 13 of those use the county tax rolls for billing services. Obviously, there's a reason why more than half choose this method, and I don't see a downside to it. I know there's going to be a little bit of disruption, but in the long run, I think it's going to save us all a lot of grief, obviously a lot of money, and if we can save grief and money, I'm all for it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Holt.
Ron Holt of Royal Grande. I would pretty much echo the previous comments. I don't see, there may be something that I missed in this that calls to question some elements of it, but I don't see any drawback, and I would like to see you go ahead and approve this as soon as you can. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Thacker.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Thacker, and the staff report is thorough and a long time coming. You did ask your previous general manager for this information as far back as June. We could have known a lot more and maybe saved ourselves some heartburn in the meantime. I did raise a question at your last meeting about the process that went on in Grover Beach when they considered the temporary or interim agreement or the current agreement and the idea of the equity and the $15,000 flat fee plus the 57 cents per connection. And you didn't talk too much about that, and Mr. Scholes was advised to recuse himself from that discussion at the Grover Beach meeting, while Ms. Lucy and Mr. Guerrero participated in that discussion in Oceano. Roy Grande hasn't had that discussion, and I'm curious if Oceano should participate in that discussion at this level, because they already participated at their home turf. You are avoiding a conflict. They walked right into it, if there is such a thing. And I think I posed that question, and I don't know if you've done the research or no, or if anybody really cares. But I think the equitable formula is dead on arrival if Grover Beach has already shot it down. I encourage you to go to the tax roll. I have all along. I think you have, with NBS, because they did the assessment district for your Five Cities Fire Authority, they know every parcel in your three communities. You are the same people that are being assessed, and so that's why their estimate is pretty, I think, pretty reasonable, very reasonable, to pursue that setup, because they've already done the work. Miss Lucy, am I boring you?
Please just address your comments to the
council. It is distracting when someone's twitching or rolling their eyes. Got distracted. What are we going to do with the past billing, was that success? Are you smiling now? You were successful in distracting me?
Please address your comments to the board as a whole and not to an individual board member.
You have an outstanding billing cycle with Oceano that has yet to be addressed. Going further forward with Oceano till we get on the tax roll has yet to be addressed. I believe you can bill in arrears for the services that have been provided thus far that have not been paid, and then anything up until June when you get on that tax roll. Oceano will get a bill in arrears for 2014-15, 15-16. So what the mechanism is for that, I don't know. But we've got to get there because you don't have an agreement with them. You don't have a formula that is agreeable to everyone. Just as John talked about, what's equitable for the three agencies it hurts the Sand District. And that's who you're here serving tonight, is the Sand District. So what's best for the Sand District? And I think, in all honesty, Oceano has worked themselves right out of the job. So take it away from them. Give it to the county tax assessor to take over and get that money, because you did provide the service.
Thank you. Ms. Peterson.
Debbie Peterson, City of Grover Beach. That's where I live. I had three things I wanted to raise, and I would support that it go on the property tax rolls. However, there are three things that I think we should at least take into account, because they affect individuals and the cities and the district that collect for us, and that is that the two cities in the district will suffer financially because they will not have a contribution to their water billing, and that will affect their bottom line. Also, individuals who are mostly paid monthly or bimonthly will suffer because they will the amount will be roughly the same. It'll be $2 more a year, but they'll have to budget more carefully, because instead of paying six times a year, they'll have to pay twice a year. And that's a hardship for folks on limited incomes. And thirdly, the cost will go down for us as a district, but for individuals it will go up $2 a year. Not a huge amount, but there have been such. People have been very, very generous and approved a number of bond issues, and also property taxes that had been decreased over the hard times now have been brought up to not at the 2% rate that we have through Prop 13, but have been brought up to their current values. And so for a lot of people, that also has created some additional cost and hardship. And so while I would still advocate for going to the property tax rolls, because I think it's in the best interest of the district, I just want to make that point that this will present a hardship for families who are still struggling financially. And that is a lot of us in this community.
Thank you very much. Any other comment? Mr. Mack.
Thank you for staff putting in all the time and effort and addressing all the questions. I agree with the tax roll. It's more transparent to the public, and it's cost effective. It betters all the citizens and the Sand District. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment? Okay, hearing none, we'll close public comment and come back to the board for discussion and a motion.
Do I need to start, or?
Please, John.
I don't know if I should go down this road. Never mind. I'm not going to do that. You know, it's been a long time since Ms. Peterson and I have agreed on a lot. I think her three points were right on the money, and it was really one of the reasons why I was really concerned with respect to going to tax rolls, and then obviously there's also some local control. But after having this information, I believe it probably is the most equitable way equitable way to go about it, even though I still have some concerns, as she had stated, so she kind of took my thunder tonight. So I think part of the staff's recommendation was to do that in the long term. There's still the part about the short-term discussion. And I will say, even though I had recused myself and did not vote in Grover Beach, that I have talked to folks and done my own reading of it. And I will say that the suggested formula, or the $15,000 base that was in part of that suggested formula, actually was probably in line with Grover Beach's actual cost, because I think that cost was actually $16,000. So I'm not sure if the council discussed that. And then I know that it probably, looking at the 57 cents per connection, probably would have been more palatable had it been closer to 25 cents per connection. So I think there may be an opportunity, because we still have to figure out what to do short term. But long term, I think Ms. Peterson made the point, Ms. Spencer made the point about the survey that John, that you did. That's probably more compelling to me than a lot of the other information. So that's kind of where I am right now. So. Thank you, Chair Hill.
Director Lucy.
I'm in favor of the tax rolls. Oshano hasn't enjoyed this process at all. It's taken up a lot of time on our board. It's been a lot of changes. We did put a proposal on the table for people. Arroyo Grande and Oshano did agree with the formula. Grover Beach was very much involved in those discussions. I did have a chance to listen to Grover Beach's meeting, although I didn't have the handouts. So I don't know what the formula was that was distributed at the Grover Beach meeting, but they don't have an issue with the taxes. It's a hardship for smaller households, that's for sure. Yeah. There's no question about that, but it's not like any of you care.
And John, I did want to ask you real quick. I'm sorry, Jim. Can I jump in real quick for the question? So we would identify which parcels would get added to the tax rolls, because I know that someone had a question of, we're not going to just be charging vacant lots, vacant parcels, correct?
No, there'll be a survey. In fact, we have to know, like, regard to a parcel, if it's a motel with a bunch of units, if it's a mobile home park. So we have to have a detailed understanding of who's on the lot.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Sorry about that.
John, I just had one more question. On changing from over to APNs, I don't know if the other cities, I mean, the other two cities are working off APNs or, you know, parcel numbers or however they're doing it, but is that going to be, will it be just an initial expense up front? And I know it won't be continuous, but do you have any idea of, I would assume that it's not included in the 10,000, because that's a lot of data entry.
The initial amount for collecting the APNs, and as it was stated tonight, the company that we've contacted already has most of that information anyway. But it would be included in that 10,000, and then the 10,000 after that would be more of a maintenance charge for keeping track of any changes that occur from year to year and submitting the information to the county.
Oh, okay, great. Thanks.
My thoughts on it are that this is the least cost option that is obviously an option that's seen success at a number of other locations. There's the initial implementation of it will be what it is. There'll be some impact. But I think as people get used to that after the initial switchover, that'll be it'll become just the way it is. With respect to the cities suffering, I don't really see the cities are suffering, because the cities who bill at their cost will have that cost eliminated as well as the revenue source. So I see that as a net neutral. The $2 a parcel more that each of the parcels will undergo, I think that's far less than the amount that the sanitation district would have to again raise the rates to cover the billing under any other scenario, whether it be private billing, whether it be the so-called equitable billing formula, whether it be in-house hiring more people to do it. Whatever it is, the $2 a parcel is the cheapest way to go in any case. So I'm definitely in support of the tax rolls. I don't know if we want to handle this as a two-part item or one-part item.
I do have a question. And someone had I think Ms. Tacker had brought up being able to bill in arrears. John, do you or Jenna have a response to that or any information on that?
Billing in arrears in terms of, is this going back a couple of board meetings? Is that what you're referencing?
Well, I'm referencing if we're moving toward tax roll. If I know we had missed a cycle in which the Community Services District did not bill,
mm-hmm.
So I didn't know if that there was an opportunity to go back.
Yeah, so we did research that, and we could not find any provision in state law prohibiting billing in arrears. I think that is more of a policy issue that, you know, do we want to bill a year later for one cycle missed? But in order for the county to pick that up, we would have to consider it delinquent. They will only bill going forwards or delinquent is what?
Okay.
Am I not answering your question?
No, you answered my question. Yes, you did. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was just a reaction, but go ahead and finish. I'm sorry.
I was trying to make sure I was not going, understanding what I was supposed to be answering. That's what, when we talked to staff at the county, that's what she told me.
Yeah. No, you answered my question when you said delinquent. It just kind of was a red flag to me, dealing with when I say county and delinquent, and we know what the county does in situations like that. I don't want to put anyone in that situation if I don't, you know, clearly.
The board could direct us to go back and whatever unpaid bills we have, go back to the agency, in this case OCSD, and try to work some out with the general manager where we become current and collect up to current, if that's what the board.
I have some thoughts in there, but I'll wait till we get through what's in front of us. So the recommendation, Jim, you were talking about how we want to take this. I don't know if we, I mean.
There's a two-part issue on the agenda, which is one to going forward for next year's billing to put it on the county rolls and authorize staff to proceed with the process to arrange to do that in a timely fashion. And then the second part of it is to seek temporary billing agreements with each member agency or other course we may choose to follow. So if we want to take it in as one item, it kind of seems to me there's two different items there. The first one's pretty easy to address, which is to begin the process of joining the county tax roll. So I would propose taking that as a separate item as the first part, and I would move to begin the process of joining the San Luis Obispo County tax rolls for long-term billing services for this district, as recommended in the staff report.
Okay, so that's a motion. I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the first part of the recommendation, which is to begin the process of joining the county tax roll for our long-term billing services. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Vice Chair Schultz?
Yes.
Chairman Hill?
Yes. The second part, then, is to seek temporary billing agreements with each member agency for the remainder of the fiscal year. And
so I did want to make a comment. There's a couple of things. Because we keep talking about equitable in billing, and I think the one thing that keeps getting lost is that when each individual member is billing, they are billing for their costs, and only they can justify what their cost is, and that's going to be based on software, technology, personnel, and whatnot. So obviously it's going to be difficult to get to that point. So I want to just make sure that I put that out there. I do think obviously we're going to have to figure out some temporary billing agreements with each member agency. And I know it had come up earlier that the city of Groveland Beach, the council had said they would prefer to stick with their methodology. But I'd say when I look at that compared to the formula that was put out there with the base fee, I think there is some opportunity to at least reach some sort of agreement in which we're not asking member agencies to allowing them to recoup what they can justify are their costs in the short term. So that's a thought that I have. And so I don't know if anyone else has any discussion on that. If not, I'll make a motion. John, did you have something? I saw you lean forward.
Yeah, I was, when I made this recommendation, I was thinking along the lines of just making agreements with each agency for, bearing in mind what you've just said, that each agency has their own needs and how they do it. So if we make agreements with what we already have in place, because then we cover the part about not having a contract, we continue where we are, nobody has to change anything. We get to the end of the year and we go to the tax roll. So that was what I had in mind when we staff made this recommendation. Not so much that we would change things or that we had to come to an equitable. If it's better to just continue each agency as they are now, then maybe that's the best thing to get to where we need to be.
And you said through the end of the calendar year. Is that what you're saying?
The fiscal year.
Fiscal year, right. So then I guess I would move that we direct staff to seek a temporary billing agreement with each member agency for the remainder of the fiscal year. I think there was actually a similar motion I made several meetings ago.
I'll second that for purpose of discussion.
Okay.
And the discussion is that I'm... On the one hand, I think I'm sorry that the effort to find an equitable billing agreement has seemed to reach an impasse. I'm sorry that had happened. I'm also aware that this agency is established its billing by ordinance, and typically in violation of ordinances, an example that comes to mind is weed abatement, where owners of property who fail to abate their weeds are given a weed abatement by the responsible, in the case of our jurisdictions, it would be the Five Cities Fire Authority, and a contractor is basically sent out to abate the weeds, and then an administrative fee of 100% is appended to that. And I would suggest that for agencies that refuse to collect our properly ordained fees, that something like that is not inappropriate. The two things come up, reasonableness and equitableness, and those concepts are very important to me. And unfortunately, I don't see a way to get to that until we join the county tax rolls as we've just voted to do. So those are my thoughts, and if we are unable to, for whatever reason, come to agreements about collecting our properly ordained charges, it seems to me that anything we proceed with should be discussed along the lines of how the fire authority deals with failure to abate weeds.
Jim, I don't even know if we have that authority, because you're comparing an analogy in which people have own a property, they don't maintain the weeds properly, they're given multiple notices to go out and abate the situation, and then you send a consultant out to do the work, and then you build that respective individual, not an organization. So I don't even think we have that authority. I think, look, we've done most of the heavy lifting, and I really hope we can get over some of this other stuff. And I think, like I said before, there was a base fee put out there. I think the city of Grover Beach would be open to that base fee, and then plus 25 cents. I think that would be that would probably be a direction we'd give the staff to suggest that to them, but I don't know where the other agencies are on, or basically what your position is on that formula in the interim.
I think the city of Aurora Grande would support that, I'm confident.
No, our board voted on a formula, 15K, 57 cents per household. That's what we agreed upon for a short-term billing. And I haven't seen a formula from Grover Beach, nor have I seen a breakdown how you get to your numbers, where Arroyo Grande and Oceano, I have seen those. So it's hard for me to reduce it by 35 cents per household, which actually comes up to quite a bit of resources. John, we don't have a proposal in front of us from Grover.
What I'm saying is, since I did, so I'm speaking here as a representative of this board, because I didn't obviously vote in Grover, but in doing research, I'm putting forward that I believe that staff could have a conversation with the city manager, and that I think something along the lines of 15,000 plus 25 cents is closely in line with the amount of money that the city has said this is our cost to do the billing. That's what I'm saying. But I don't know where Oceano is on that.
And I'll take that back to Oceano and say, you know, Grover Beach can afford 25 cents, and that's what they think that they're spending on billing.
Well, it's 15,000 is the base fee, and the 25 cents is for variable costs. So that's been a hard thing to justify of why pick 57 cents.
Well, because everybody has different staffing patterns. Okay. Everybody has different unions. Everybody has different facilities. You know, some people do fog programs. Some people don't do fog programs. Some people do, you know, there's justification for those 57 cents. You know, because you guys have figured out how to save money and only build, you know, have to be compensated 25 cents, you know, that's great. But I think that Arroyo Grande, I think they have an extremely competent fiscal manager, and I think that department knows exactly what they spend on everything.
And
so,
well,
I'll take it back. But
well, please do.
I'm not going to.
Well, please do, because I think that 25 cents is based on variable. That's mailing and other things like that. So that's what I believe they would be comfortable with. I mean, the $15,000 base, I think, is basically the overhead. So I'm just saying, if we're saying to staff,
is there another meeting going on?
So if we're asking staff to work through an agreement with each agency in the interim, I'm just giving you some suggestions of what I believe would work with Grover Beach.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's fine. I think they're totally approachable, and I misunderstood you. I thought you were presenting a motion.
No, I'm not making a motion. I'm making a suggestion.
Right.
But I did have a motion that dealt with the second part of this.
And I seconded it, and I'm amenable to your suggestion of $15,000 and plus 25 cents and per connection. And I would, if it's acceptable, I would include that in the motion now so that we have a concrete proposal that we can take to the member jurisdictions.
Okay. Then I will modify the motion to include that.
And I will continue to second that. We have had public comment on this. I'll open it one more time for public comment because this is a specific proposal that wasn't otherwise mentioned. So if there is public comment on this.
I did watch the Grover Beach discussion, and everyone on your council was questioning the $15,000 fee, that flat rate. What does it constitute? You're assuming, or someone's told you, but that's not in a formula that we've ever seen. The only daylight we've seen on the formula was an email from Debbie Malicote that was released by the Oceano Community Services District. That's not before you tonight to see, us to see. And then, of course, if we're going to agree on a formula that's 15,000 plus 25 cents or 57 cents or whatever the cents per hookup is, we're well into the year, and we need to just prorate to get to the end of the year. So the number changes because we've already paid them. We've paid each of your agencies something so far. And then there's still 2 months hanging out there in Oceano that is not addressed by the new formula. And back billing and different customers, perhaps. So that still has to be resolved.
So, John, the
is there anyone else that public comments open again? Is there anyone else
that
has a comment?
Would like to comment on this item? Okay, hearing none.
Okay.
So I asked you if it was a motion. You said no.
It was originally not a motion. It is now a motion because it's merely a suggestion. We're not saying for you to agree. What I'm saying is for staff to approach each of the agencies, and you can take it back to your board and say this is a number or this is a formula that the board feels is this board feels is justifiable, and they have the opportunity to say no. I'm just trying to help this process along.
And I thought that we asked the finance directors to help this process along.
Well, the finance directors, here's the problem. Here's the problem. While the two cities sent finance directors, your manager serving in the capacity of a financial director met with them. So he had the authority to say, this works, and bring it to the board. The finance director in Grover Beach had not had a chance to talk to the city manager to run that formula and bring it back. That's why they had the meeting that they did. So now that I'm here in this capacity and I can't vote over there based on the advice of my legal counsel, I'm suggesting a formula that I think will help us move closer. But if you're saying your board would not even be open to that, then I guess...
I'm saying we did not discuss a potential motion. You know, we didn't discuss it because we hadn't been given anything from Grover. We had correspondence and communication from Arroyo Grande, right? But there was nothing from Grover.
Well,
this, I think what we're attempting to do here is to give a proposal that each of our council, your board of directors, and our council can consider this and see if it seems a reasonable way to move forward, and they'll either vote it up or down.
That is the intent, yes.
And okay.
That's how
that's
I see
intent.
It.
That's the intent, yes. That is my intent.
And again, it's the motion and second is on the table. So I'll ask for a roll call, please.
Director Lucy?
No.
Vice Chair Schultz?
Yes.
Chairman Hill?
Yes.
Okay, so at the risk of adding more fuel to the fire, and this is not a personal thing on Oceano. I befriended this organization in the past, but I would not be doing my job if I did not bring this up. There was a payment made in 366, so we don't have a formal agreement, and we need to figure out how those funds are applied or if they need to be returned, because if we don't have an agreement, I'm a little concerned that we've made a payment that is not being utilized under the formula. So maybe I'm way off base, and maybe legal counsel or someone can help me understand. And this is not picking on them. I'm just trying to...
No, and we don't take it as picking, you know. Yeah. You love to see the fire at the table, remember?
I'm just saying there was money paid.
So the fire's at the table.
No.
One at a time.
Hold on, please.
Mr. Schultz has the floor at the moment. When he's finished, we'll...
Yeah. So I'm just merely raising the point of there was a payment made, and we thought we were moving down the road of an agreement. We had a special meeting, and it was determined that we did not have agreement. So I just want to make sure that there's a proper accounting of that money, and can we also, if in fact we're moving toward trying to work out an agreement, is it reimbursed, or do we ask them to apply it to past billings? I'm just trying to figure out how we get.
So it's my understanding that we made a payment in the amount of $3,666, and part of that payment was an email, and that payment has been applied to the current billing services. That's my understanding. And so as long as Oceano does do those billing services, then we have offered the money, they've accepted it, and so we can no longer take our money back. It's an offer and acceptance, so it's a contract.
Okay. I'm just trying to be good.
So, yeah, that is, as long as they fulfill their end of the deal also and provide billing services, then that's a done deal, and we have both met our responsibilities.
Okay.
And Mayor Schultz.
Yes.
When we received the memo, right, with payment, we really seriously took it into consideration. Would it be better to see two late cycles on the books or one? You know, there was an option of whether to pay the past billing or an option to use it on the current billing. And to minimize harm to anybody, we applied it because there was an option given.
I remember that.
So it had said, please apply this to past billing, right, then it would have moved in that direction. You know, it said, please apply whether you want to do past or future. You know, and that memo was taken as a contract. You know, but the agreement is that Oceano will provide the billing quarterly for the Oceano area for $3,666 per cycle, per billing cycle.
That is our understanding, correct? Okay. Well, Mary, Mary, I agree with you. And it was just the way that we obviously did business, and I think we learned a valuable lesson not to do business like that yet again. I think Mr. Clemens and some of us were hopeful that we were heading down the correct path, but I will agree with you on that. And we were remiss in not saying it should have been for. And so I'm a big proponent of taking accountability, and so I'm going to live by that. So I'm good with the explanation from legal counsel.
We need clarification on the motion that just passed. So as we try to move forward and arrange a temporary billing, are we limited to the 15,000 plus 25? But or if it's rejected, can we move forward to try to come to other solutions?
I would say it suggests that is a max. If you're going to move anywhere, you're going to move down. You're not going to move up.
Okay.
So, and if we can't reach agreement, then come back to this board and we'll make another tough decision.
Okay. Thank you.
Any And I believe if we need to clarify what the idea was, is that our board is offering to each of the three member jurisdictions the option of continuing billing services for the remainder of the fiscal year at a rate of $15,000 base plus 25%, I'm sorry, 25 cents per connection going forward. So that would be the direction that we give that prorated to the end of the year, that we give that option to the boards and the councils. There is a 5C on the agenda tonight. I will wait until after our closed session to see if we need to bring that up. And meanwhile, is there miscellaneous oral communication?
So if I could interrupt, we just, in order to change the agenda, I think we should have a motion and then a second, just to make sure we're doing things procedurally.
So basically the motion is to hold item 5C until after discussion closed session.
It could be either, it could be to continue the item to after closed session, it could be to continue it to the next meeting, it could be to take it off the agenda, it could be to continue it to the closed session.
So, Jim, I'm just kind of curious, what was your intent with putting this item on the agenda?
My intent with it was to see if we can put on the agenda, however it might go on the agenda, the possibility of making a proposal to the State Water Board.
Oh, I don't know if I can...
I really am scared to legally talk about strategy in public.
It's not a matter of strategy.
So then I'm going to move that we remove this from the agenda.
Second. Second.
Is there a public comment then on the item?
I moved from the agenda. You went to public.
Your comment has to be limited to whether this is on the agenda or not.
Okay. This item, I like that it was going to be on the agenda. I like that you're going to include the public in open session in a discussion of whether or not to put it on a future agenda. How hard is that? That's what the item says it is to put it on a future agenda. Let's have a discussion about putting something on a future agenda. We do that all the time. So I don't know what the heartburn is. Now, when we get down to the details, and I'll take this opportunity, if you don't mind, to speak to the closed session item that's related.
That's. Let me ask that we delay that because we have oral and written communication, and then we'll entertain comment on the closed session at that time.
I'll do that. I'll agree to that.
Thank you.
Debbie Peterson, I live in Grover Beach. The public has been asking for a year. Could we not please settle this? And we haven't really had any answers, so I think it might be... a nice response to give us an answer or two after 12 months. And prior to that, I guess the event occurred that's being discussed in 2010. It's been 5 years.
Beatrice Spencer, Rio Grande. Some may think this is really off topic, but I found this one bulleted item in the gentleman's earlier presentation to be pertinent to this as well. There's a sentence here that says, we have found that property owners and ratepayers are more accepting of rate increases when they understand why the increases are needed. And I'm going to substitute the verbiage here a little bit. Your ratepayers are more accepting of something if we have at least a little bit of understanding as to why even in this gentleman's packet here, he's including paying $1.1 million payment for fines related to a prior permit violation during an extreme storm event in December 2010. He talks about it.
so.
It should be on the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you for coming to the point. Would anyone else like to address this item? Okay, it's been moved and seconded that the item be deleted from the agenda. Let's have a roll call on that.
Well, I'd like legal counsel to maybe just discuss the legal aspect of this. This is not that we don't want to have a conversation. There are legal requirements, and there are some things that we are bound by. Brown Act is one, and I think Ms. Peterson would know this very well. So would you please?
Yes, so I think that, and I have advised the board in this way, that it is, although deciding whether or not to agendize this to a future meeting may not violate the Brown Act, it opens up a discussion about that includes information that may be privileged under the closed session confidentiality requirements. And the board, no member of the board is authorized, can disclose any of that information in public without prior board authorization to release the confidentiality requirement. So it's very hard when a discussion happens to, in my mind, I think of it as a mute button. I can't just mute things that may be violations of the Brown Act. So it does lead to some sort of liability, potential liability.
Okay, can we have a roll call, please?
Director Lucy?
I'll restate the motion, please.
The motion was to remove it from the
remove
agenda.
Remove item 5C from the agenda.
Yes.
Vice Chair Schultz?
Yes.
Chairman Hill?
No. Motion passes 2-1. Moving on to miscellaneous items, 6A, miscellaneous oral communication. Is there anything from staff? Anything from the directors? Any written communications? Didn't appear to be.
One thing, there is a town hall meeting the 27th at the Oceano Community, the train depot, sorry. The one in Oceano. And Sheriff Parkinson will be there, and so some of the issues that are happening, particularly around the Sand District, I think that's a good venue for people to come forward and express what they like, what they don't like, and how things can change. So that's the 27th in Oceano. And it's posted on the webpage, and it's really the Board of Supervisor for our area who's, well, for part of the area, who's spearheading it.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to closed session. First of all, public comment. Let me have legal counsel introduce what the closed session is, and then we can have public comment on the closed session.
The board is adjourning into closed session for four separate items. The first is conference with legal counsel for existing litigation pursuant to paragraph 1 of subdivision D of section 54956.9 of the government code, two cases, the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District versus State Water Resources Control Board. The second is South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District versus Special Risk District Risk Management Authority. The third item is for discussion of public employee appointment for district legal counsel pursuant to government code section 54957B1. And the fourth is conference with legal counsel regarding potential litigation pursuant to government code section 54956.92, Allen DFEH number. I can read the number 444-099-139-8508.
Thank you very much. Is there any public comment on the closed session items? Ms. Tacker.
Yes, I am Julie Tacker, and I would like to speak to the State Water Board litigation. At the end of your last meeting, you disclosed the tentative ruling out of Sacramento. And so by reading this, someone has had to have answered by now. And when you came out of closed session, you did not say there was reportable action associated with direction to answer. So I'd like to know who authorized the special counsel to answer, because that would be Downey Brand and Mr. Seitz to answer this demur thing. What is the cost to answer? When I read this, the one thing you get out of it is perhaps an opportunity to have a new hearing. And if you went through the hearing, the grueling hearing that your counsel describes in a very whiny tone, and that there were more than 12 hours and the air conditioning had been shut down in the hearing room, and we didn't get a dinner break, and very weak arguments for a new hearing. What do you get when you get a new hearing? The arguments that were made that night was that the district could not afford to pay the $1.1 million fine. You have money now. How do you argue you can't afford to pay the fine if you have money now, and that you're implementing a rate increase that includes a $1.1 million fine? Your argument's out the window. What does it cost to go to a hearing that you can't win? They're not going to remove the fine. This goes to what I think Chair Hill, you know, you guys kind of beat him up if he put something on the agenda unilaterally, which he's allowed to do, and then you beat him up when he put something on the agenda to ask you to help him put it on a future agenda. I appreciate your transparency, Mayor Hill, and I wish I saw this in other districts and cities. I don't. So congratulations to you. What else this opens up, and if you remember, I know Mr. Hill does, because he was paying very close attention during those hearings, the counsel for the state, Julie Macedo, found what she characterized as criminal activity. I love when criminals get penalized, punished, go to jail, or pay restitution. But are you willing to go down a road that cracks open the door for criminal activity? Maybe you are, because maybe Knutson's going to show you some. I'm going to tie back to the savings by going to the tax roll on your billing. It's about $56,000 a year. Watch how I tie this up, Jim. That $56,000 a year can be applied to paying your fine, or making a settlement, or building redundancy, saving all of the ratepayers. The last thing, the flood caused this. The flood caused all of this. Nobody could have predicted the rain. But what we do in the future, and you've been told to buy a pump, build a moat, you know, County Public Works isn't helping you with what to do in the case of a future flood. But this would have been the opportunity. Monday, there's a wet weather preparedness presentation at the Oceano Community Services District, and someone from your board or staff should be there, because Public Works is going to talk about what to do, whether it's evacuate or whatever you can do when the wet weather comes. So
we want to tie that back in.
It flooded, and that's why you're facing a fine. Your sewer plant flooded. So that's, I'm encouraging you to assign staff to go to that meeting on Monday the 26th. But how you get to a settlement, I recommend you run with a settlement, because you're not going to win if you have another hearing.
Thank you. Any other comment? Okay, hearing none, we'll move to closed session at this time.